This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Catch me.
What? I hope that you are properly prepared for this 420 weekend confirmed.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah.
That explains a lot, actually.
Whoa, dude. Oh.
Yeah.
This is a good episode.
We'll keep it slow for you. We've got plenty to rock and roll through today. We have the two Jeffs, Jeff Cannata and Jeff Mattis.
What is up?
How's it going?
I want to say right off the top, last time I get to plug the Double Jump show on April 28th. Midnight at the UCB Theater. Be there. If you're anywhere near Los Angeles, get your tickets now. It will sell out.
You can plug it next week.
I guess I could.
Yeah,
I guess
you can.
I guess I could.
Yeah. Second to last plug, folks.
Probably could.
Second to last plug for the big show.
Yeah.
I'll come again. It was fun.
Christian and I have been trying to figure out a way to get you in the show. We've got to figure out.
Promises.
No, wait, I want to. If you have any ideas of what Garnet should do in our show, send it to us.
Anyway, so there. And at the far end of the table, in the special guest chair, Carlos Rodella from his own video production world.
From Screen Tear, it's a show. Yeah. It's
there you
a
go.
Show, yeah.
First timer.
It's about video
games. Welcome.
Hello.
So we will tear your screens and get you broken in.
Carlos and I are going to take over the show.
Okay. About board games, and that's going to happen just like so you know. At some
point. So hopefully you didn't 420 too much or else you're just going to fall asleep.
Hater. We're doing board game night at my house, and I'm going to convert you. And then next week you're going to come back and you're going
to
be like,
oh my God,
I was so wrong.
Probably not going to do it in that voice. Unless.
That's my Garnet impression.
Unless I'm
Spot
doing.
On, right?
Yeah.
Unless I'm doing my new video in the back of a limo. In which case, I might be using that voice. It's possible.
Garnet is obsessed with the hot girls' problems.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, geez. Let's stop with that.
See, I can just like dangle the bait out there, and then you took it. It's awesome. You jumped right on it. We got a ton for you for video game stuff today, along with the board games. We have got some info, an update on the Prey 2 situation, little information on Darksiders. We'll talk some about Darksiders 2 being delayed. Jeff and I have both been playing Trials.
Evolution,
yes.
Right.
There's been a lot of Fez playing going on. Mm. Jeff Mattis, did you play any more Yakuza?
I did.
Oh, really?
I did, yes. I'm not quite done with Chapter 2, but I think I'm right at the end or getting
That's
close.
Good. I'd be interested. I'm in chapter four, so I'll try not to spoil it for you. So we're going to do that. I thought that a bunch of us saw Cabin in the Woods over the weekend, and I couldn't stop myself from thinking about Resident Evil while I was watching that and some of the conversations that we had. And interestingly enough, in the thread for the show last week, there was a similar sort of detour into the conversation about why we give B-movies a little more leeway than we give B-games, so to say. But they're not really B-games. But you know what
I'm
saying?
All games are B-games, really.
To a point. But the big news that just hit the interwebs, God of War Ascension is coming out for the PlayStation 3. It's under development for the PlayStation 3 over at Sony Santa Monica. New game director. It's not God of War 4.
Right.
So,
which means what exactly?
Well, I think it means that if you played God of War 3, it was pretty clear that the end of God of War 3 was the end of the Kratos line for at least that timeline, right?
Yep.
So I love this. If you haven't watched the trailer yet, the trailer doesn't really tell you a whole lot. It's one of those cinematic trailers, but it doesn't even have much. It doesn't really have any game.
Surprise. You mean it's every trailer?
No, because the Dishonored trailer, which we'll talk about in a little while, has a lot of at least action. So you can sort of say, oh, well, if they're doing this, maybe it means this sort of game mechanic.
Right.
This doesn't have anything in it. It's just like Kratos being torn apart by chains.
Yeah, it's so curious what a God of War game is going to play like.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about the beginnings of the game, and then we can talk about what we might see in it as far as mechanics-wise. So it starts off with this like my Greek grandmother narrating, and she says, there was a time. Well, that's not really, it's a very Greek grandmother.
There was a time before Kratos became the monster known as the Ghost of Sparta.
So it sounds like they're setting up for a prequel, right? Or some sort of origin story.
Little Kratos.
Little Kratos.
Little Kratos. I can see that.
Which could be cool because, I mean, it would be interesting to see how Kratos got to where he is. However, the new games director, his name's Todd Pappy, by the way, has been tweeting that you should hold your horses and don't get too carried away yet because they're doing something different. Hmm. And as I kick this to you guys to talk about what you would want out of a God of War origin story, let's call it, what concerns me is that we've played Kratos, especially in this most recent game, freaking battling titans that he is running across the side of as this little dude taking on gods, battling, you know, mythical beasts, and everything is just, you know, super over the top, heroic, crazy stuff. How do you go back to a time before he had even made his pact with Ares?
Yeah, that's a tricky one, isn't it? Because if he was super badass before all that, he didn't really work up to something, did you? But do we care if we're playing stuff that's really over the top and fun?
I'm throwing it out to you guys.
So make him have to get to be badass. I mean, that's an interesting...
He starts out as like this totally nice dude.
Yeah, he's just a
it's like, right. Well, hey, it's Kratos, everybody.
Hey, Kratos.
Hey, does how you solve.
He does his little dance. Hey, it's Kratos. Do your dance, Kratos. All right. Ding, 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 ding. The Kratos dance. I don't know.
It does solve the perennial problem of starting off these action games without your powers, right? There's always that thing of like, I'm badass. Oh, he took all my shit away.
Oh, wait, yeah, I hate when, yeah, you're, yeah, exact prototype, right, or something.
And Batman and every game like that, because they want you to earn and learn how to use those things. And obviously, if you go back, then you can set it up as always learning how to do all these things. But is it really going to be that fun? This sounds ridiculous on the face of it. Sounds ridiculous. Is it really going to be that fun to be the most badass warrior in the world of the time?
If they structured it like Shenmue, be awesome.
I was just going to say like an RPG-ish kind of element to it.
No, they're not going to mess with the formula, obviously.
They're not going to do that.
You're not going to be killing anything. Well, I mean, you're probably going to be killing big stuff again. They're going to figure out some way to work that into the... You don't go take a huge step backwards like that, I don't think, after you've already...
But it doesn't have to be a step backwards.
That's what
it?
I was going to say. So would it be a step backwards to go that route?
Well, with that combat system, and I mean, I guess there are things they could do to it.
Well, why don't you have him have like all the basic punches and kicks? It's the same kind of feel and the mechanics,
right?
But he's not taking the craziest stuff, right? And he has to kind of work up like a Fable thing. I don't know,
like all man-sized dudes, like
that's, yeah, those or like just... or in like Minotaur maybe, like just kind of big.
I don't know. Yeah. I think that a trademark of that series is doing big stuff, but you can't out. I mean, Ezra's Wrath has already happened, so you can't out big that game.
Well,
punching a planet
out angry at anyway.
But yeah. that wasn't a game that focused on its combat mechanic. I mean, that was it. I mean, right. That was more a game.
Well,
that
it had a. I thought it had a combat, cool combat mechanic.
But. It was a quick time, really. I mean, a lot of it was just, you know, the Barry button. But that was still cool.
It had a cool combat, I thought.
Yeah. I think it was cool though.
So, how would you feel then about a God of War that really emphasized the churn combat, the, you know, going through tons of guys?
It's almost like Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah. How would you feel about that?
I think that'd be okay.
I don't know. Yeah. I kind of love the set piece stuff, especially in the last one. I thought they did such a great job with making me feel surprised every time the scale got messed with, and I felt like I was doing things that I shouldn't be able to be doing in a
video
game.
But it was of two modes almost, where you were fighting rank and file, and then that would get you to the events.
True.
How about the events, or maybe like a giant ship or something, right? So you're fighting a bunch of dudes, bandits or whatever, and all of a sudden you're like, here's a set piece moment, but it's just not what we think of like the big monster. It's like you got to, you know, chain the boat, and I don't know. I'm putting boat because that's a non-monster thing that's huge. You know what I mean?
It's got boats in it.
It's got boats.
I don't know. I feel like they stray from the formula at their peril, sadly, because I would be excited to see it changed up. And especially, as you say, it's not God of War 4,
right.
So it's maybe
it's
a side title. Yeah. And that they have a little leeway in that way. They've protected themselves a bit in that way. But I also feel like those games are so specific to what they offer the gamer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it would be.
There's probably a way for them to gameplayify that backstory that they showed off, you know, snippets from in the first three games. You know, it's like everybody's going to war. You can have huge battles and stuff. But but you're right, Jeff. Like, if you take away that I'm scaling a, you know, 100 or 1,000 story creature to stab it in the eye, like, and you take that out of there, like, you're sort of our ninja guy.
You wind up fighting the very gods on Mount Olympus.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
It's pretty freaking crazy. However, you know, the more, so my original thought was, wow, how do they do that? But then I started thinking about it some more, and it's almost as if in the race to get to that epic stature, part of the really great part about an action game, which is the combat piece of it. I mean, think about so Ninja Gaiden has sort of abdicated the throne. But think of, for instance, did you guys play Bayonetta?
Yeah.
Okay. So Bayonetta, great frantic action. However, it's super crazy because of all the air combos and because of the speed of it. So bring that down a little bit, but come back to that Ninja Gaiden sort of style where it's very important to learn weapons, learn combo systems. And then if you had a great collection of enemy and solid enemy AI against which to really practice it, I can see that game being really fun.
You're preaching to the choir as far as I'm concerned, because the least interesting stuff – I love the scale and the size from a story and from a I can't believe what I'm doing perspective.
Yes.
But from a pure gameplay perspective, the least interesting stuff in God of War is the QTE stuff.
Okay.
You know, I think when I fight a boss and I whittle it down, and then I finally get to push O and start my little QTE segment, that's when I'm having the least amount of fun playing that game. So fewer of those for me is a win, but I think it goes farther away from what God of War sort of advertises.
I mean, look, this thing could be something along the lines of God of War 300.
Yeah. Right, with a bunch of guys, yeah. And here's the thing, with like you're saying, like the brand of God of War is that stuff, right? The over the top, whatever. But it still would be cool to kind of flesh out the combat.
Oh, yeah.
And do that stuff. And so it's,
and the combat has been strong before. It's just true. That you were there's so many other things going on.
Yeah.
You were, you know, there's and keep in mind it had great weapon systems to work through, and then you had the big battle, so you pull it down, tighten that experience. If this thing comes out and has really, really tight combat and it's fantastic and everyone loves that moment to moment experience, it's going to be a winner, definitely,
well,
I think.
First of all, I know it's Circle, not O. I'm correcting myself. But secondly, do you feel that the combat in God of War 3 is not tight?
No, I think it's solid, but it's still a little loose. It's not quite Ninja Gaiden. Unless you crank it up to super hard, if you crank it up to super hard, it will brutalize you.
Oh, it's great.
It's
great, but it is definitely controller breaking.
It will brutalize you. So
you could add a little Witcher in that, maybe. More a little Witcher element of combat, yeah?
Of bombs and stuff like that?
Or
like
just like
ads?
The different kind of, you know, way to attack and stuff like that. I don't know. It might be.
I don't know.
Well, no chain blades too, right?
Well,
theoretically.
There's all this speculation. There's speculation there's no chain blades. We don't know anything. We honestly don't know anything other than there was an announcement video. There is going to be a live stream on Monday where they're going to answer some questions that people have submitted over Twitter and talk some about the game. Who knows what they're going to reveal? Another question that came up, and people were immediately responsive, I saw on the PlayStation blog comments where they were like, well, no Vita? I mean, because there's no Vita. It just says PS3. And
I think would be the coolest thing to bring into that game? Co-op.
Co-op?
I would love
that.
But
how do you co-op Kratos?
Well...
Oh, this is my
Kratos
brother.
Kratos, too.
Yeah,
Matos.
Little Kratos.
Kratos and Matos.
It's Kratos and Matos. They're in Barbados.
You say Kratos, I say yeah.
No, I'm saying, though, that I mean that is definitely a challenge of this sort of game, because the game has been so focused on that iconic character that trying to do co-op is really tough, really tough. And everybody you play, like, everyone's going to want to be – I don't want to be the other guy. I want to be Kratos.
Dude, just do super deformed
Kratos. You always get to be Kratos.
little Kratos, like your idea, I think that's the best. Super deformed little Kratos.
Little Kratos. And he's got, like – he doesn't have chain blades. He's got, like, balloons.
Or, like, butter knives.
Sorry, you guys are just silly now. You're just going silly.
That's
But I wouldn't worry so much about Vita. I mean, obviously, Vita is an important part of Sony's strategies going forward. They've done two God of War games for PSP.
There will be one.
So maybe it'll be maybe it won't be crossplay. I don't know, but I can't imagine that they aren't like. Look, if they were thinking about doing God of War for PlayStation 3 long enough ago to bring this out, clearly somebody somewhere is thinking about a God of War for Vita, right? I mean, that's not rocket science.
They're just trying to figure out how to work backtouch onto the God of War franchise.
You mean under? What's the other word for undertouch or underskin or
undercarriage?
It's a lot of bad.
Oh,
creepy words.
Jeff, they could have the Westminster Dog Show game where you have to check the undercarriage.
Oh,
of each contestant.
Back touch. Hear it now.
That's... All right, so 10 minutes and I've completely lost control.
That's pretty good, actually.
Oh, man.
The Westminster, anyway.
He said undercarriage.
He said
I do.
All right, let's talk about some games we played. We got kind of all kinds of other newsy stuff to get to.
Let's talk about Fez.
You want to talk about Fez?
Yeah.
All right. Tell me what you think about. You heard what I thought about Fez last week. I have not had a chance to play more of it because I was playing Yakuza and Trials.
So you ended up not playing a ton of it, right?
I played about 2.5 hours. So I got out of the main. I got out of the opening world. It's like the tutorial thing. Got into the first hub, fooled around in there long enough that then I started. Like, I got to the point where the map sort of starts to explode.
Yes.
And I have three or four oddly directional offshoots on my main map that I've started exploring.
It gets way crazier, bro.
It gets way crazier, man.
And honestly, that's my biggest gripe with the game is pure navigation, because they do some very clever, interesting things to try to help you, but ultimately I still am frustrated by not being able to get where I need to be when I want to go there.
Isn't the hook, though, the obfuscation of where you're supposed to be and like what's like, I'm going to penetrate the veil and figure out what's going on here.
No, that's absolutely true. And when you get into these nesting secret doors and you go one door leads to another door leads to another door and you're down the rabbit hole of 12 things, there's a certain amount of fun to that. And I really like the game overall. But when you get to later in the game where you're really just trying to get to specific areas that you haven't golded, for lack of a better term.
No, that's what it is. So what Jeff's talking about is when you look at your overworld map in Fez, it will put a gold highlight over any place that you've completed. And then within each world area, it has like almost like a diagram of little secrets and places that you need to explore within that level.
Yeah.
And those individually need to be golded before the entire world will get a gold circle. It's kind of like it's almost exactly like getting a gold star. It's like, oh, gold star.
Aww. Yeah. And I love the fact that when you walk to a door that you have been through before, it shows you a little preview of what's behind that door. But it's not enough, because there are some levels where there are so many doors on one given hub that when I want to go to a specific location, I'm constantly having to get to that next door, look at the little picture that it shows me of the preview, cross-reference that with the map to go, oh, no, that's not the right one. All right, what other door? What door on these 12 doors that have I not looked at yet to try to find the one specific one? It requires a lot of work. And I know that's a throwback.
So map management aside, what's your feeling about the overall spatial freak-out reality, organizing all that in your head and figuring out how to navigate this 2D turned multiple face world, because it is sort of not really 3D.
Yeah.
How did you like it?
I love it. And I love the exploration. I love the pace of the game. It's very slow and sort of methodical. And the things that are magical to me about the game are not even the rotating the world stuff. Because we've sort of seen similar things to that in other...
Paper Mario.
Paper Mario is a great example. Okay. Yeah. But there are puzzles in this game that don't even... I mean, calling them puzzles is not even, I think, the right term, because they're just... In order to collect all of the cubes and the negative cubes, you find yourself... I found myself doing things that are so far outside the box, no pun intended.
Hey.
That I found it to be magical. It's akin to playing Metal Gear Solid 2, I think is 2, where you have to plug the controller into the other port.
Oh yeah,
Psycho Mantis.
Boss fight, or it's checking your save games. Like, there's so many things like that that are
Just the beginning. Remember the very very beginning.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
What Fez does on a sort of meta level is where I think it's a magical experience, especially as a fan of video games in general, because it's playing on all those tropes so often. And I found myself doing things going, well, I'm just going to try that, even though that shouldn't work, and then it works.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, that my favorite part is that meta. It's self-referential. It understands where you came from in the lineage of video games and NES, like the bad English, you know, all that stuff. It's like, it just felt like a magical, especially the beginning, right? It just feels like a magical remembrance of all those old games. And if I jump and something happens, I'm like, oh, that should be that way. And it is. You know, it feels like it all, it's supposed to be the way it is.
How do you
I don't
mean?
Know.
Can you give me like a little more concrete example?
Like when you, when you jump and like you're on those little vines or whatever and you want to just jump higher,
Like you so can, these are you climbing can, vines. If you're, yeah, if you're yeah. on a face and there's like a green vine, pretty classic yeah. stuff, you can climb
I'm like, oh, I'll just hit jump again, like old school NES, and like jump higher on the vine. I don't have to actually climb up it. And that worked. You know what I mean? These are old school NES things. It just felt like because he spent so much time on it, you know, and it's so much love went into it. It just feels so good. Yeah. And it even sounds like the part where like it broke down like the Game Genie style, remember?
Yeah.
The very beginning. Like that felt like, oh, I remember Game Genie. Mm-hmm. You know, so... Yeah, outside of the obvious mechanics from Paper Mario, it seems like, and it's smart with the navigation stuff. I just liked it because it's so warm. It made me feel so warm inside, you know?
No, I completely agree with both of you guys in terms of, I mean, the things that strike me the most about it, the strongest, are the metagame stuff, yeah. like the self-referential stuff to video games. And there's actually a surprising amount of that stuff in there. Like, I wasn't even sure. That
so how far have you guys gotten in this?
I've gotten pretty far.
Okay. Jeff's probably the furthest. I'm like three and a half hours
I'm close in. To where you are, actually. I have just a few things in the
because,
map.
Because, Jeff, one of the things that comes up in the conversations I've had over the last mm-hmm. week is people are like, well, you got to go back to it because it really gets crazy from yeah. there. And the self-referential thing comes up all the time. But no one's really explained what is more self-referential about it than – the fact that it looks like a 2D throwback game, but
well,
it's
the language stuff, right? The language stuff, definitely, where it's like broken English. But that's like old NES stuff.
The longer you play it, the more you realize that the rotating of the world isn't even the game. It is in a large sense, but there are so many new ideas brought in really late, and there are some of the puzzles are. I mean. I don't want to spoil anything.
No, it's really hard to talk about yeah. because you don't want to give a specific example of
well,
these.
Well, let me just say, I would enjoy a little more clarity because I'm not getting it.
In order to solve one of the puzzles, I had to take out my phone.
Oh, snap. Mind blown.
Yeah.
You had just to take saying. Out your phone.
Yes.
Eternal no. darkness.
I had to. Yeah. I mean, there are.
Now, did you have to take out your phone to do something with the game with your phone?
Yes.
What?
That sounds like a hook. To Garnet Lee, there you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't.
Oh, maybe not.
So there. Like I've sworn off of game facts for this title as I often do. But I've gotten to the point where you know how I think about this a lot. Actually, there's a vocabulary that each game has.
Yep.
Certain games, if you walk up to a door and it doesn't look a certain color, you can't go through that door.
You know, it's just a paste in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yep.
And then other games, if you walk up to a door and it's just plain looking, you may be able to open it. Each game has its own vocabulary, and there's also sort of a general vocabulary for video games that we all know because we all grew up playing them.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the rules are for this game.
Still. So you don't feel like you've, as I would say, cracked the code.
No. I know there is a puzzle happening here. I know there is a door that I'm supposed to be able to get through, but I don't know even what... in general way I should be thinking about this because it goes so far outside the box of what can be involved in solving it that I don't even know where to begin thinking about it. So it's not like Braid.
Do you like that?
Yes. You know how Braid is. You're in a room. You know there's a solution and you sort of just have to sit there and figure it out. With this game, I don't even think that I can figure it out if I just sit there because – it may involve something that I don't even know I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Now, this I completely understand. And here's one of the things that I found was starting to turn me off as I was – and maybe just playing it in shorter bursts would be good. But I got that experience when I started using the world map a little more and realized that – so on the world map, like I was saying, there's those diagrams that show you this room, this room, this room. And oftentimes it'll show you a picture of this room and which means there is something that you need to go do in that room. Now, sometimes it's as simple as, you know, the basic core quest of the game is that you're collecting these three-dimensional cubes. And once you collect nine of a cube, every time you collect that group of nine, then you open up another – it adds a big cube to you and enough big cubes you can open new doors and progress. So oftentimes you go to a room and that's what it was. But sometimes you go to a room which marked on your map as having something and you just kind of like, okay –
yeah.
Well, I think
what am I not getting?
I very much feel like that's part of the design ethos in that because it's so exploration heavy, the developer wants you to go in and go and run into a problem like that, and then rather than go, okay, I have to sit here and think about this until I figure it out, it's like, okay, well, I don't know what to do now. I'm going to go press on to the next room and the next room and the next room. And eventually you'll go, oh, you know what? I know what I need to do way back at room. Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of Metroid-ish in a way.
Oh, yeah. It's very much – the exploration is very much that. There's a lot of backtracking. And a lot of, you will not find everything you need to find the first time around in a lot of these rooms. You know.
Yeah. And, you know, it brings in a lot of the vocabulary from early video games. You'll find bombs a la Zelda. Yep. You'll find you know, a lot of – I don't have a second example. I was going to go for a second example.
It is.
There's a lot of stuff like that.
Well, there's also just that, like, the attention to detail we were saying. Like when you rotate that room, you're in a room and it has a chalkboard on it. And you, even that chalkboard – this is 5 years of development, right? You know, so the chalkboard has something really cool on it. Evolution. There's one evolution one. And then you flip the room and there's like the word charts, you know, and there's a refrigerator. You see the back of the refrigerator.
Yeah.
You see the back of the refrigerator.
That's a rich world. And by virtue of that and the way it's put together, it's native. Just fun to explore. It is really, I get that. Like that part of it, like we talked about last week, one of the things that stood out to me was this was a very relaxing game to play. Even when I was stuck in a puzzle as to like, oh, I'm into it.
Oh, and they certainly could have like added Mario-like elements, yeah, combat elements. They could have, and maybe for Fez, you know,
27.
Yeah, or whatever. But like it totally does not miss that. Like that, this game does not need enemies to step on.
So I was going
to
ask Jeff if you've done this, or if any of you guys have done this, where you're in a room, and if you go to the edge, like the one with the refrigerator, I did this. And I went to the edge of the room, and then I rotated it, and I fell outside of the room.
Yep.
I did that too.
Is that supposed to be enough for later?
Exactly. That's the question. That's an example of...
I fell out of the room, and...
That's an example of, what's the vocabulary of this game? What... Is that a thing? Have I found a thing that I can now employ in
other
situations?
But again, it's old Nintendo, right? You're like, what? There's this game called Athena back in the day. I don't want to go into a Nintendo tangent, but there was like bricks under the ground, you know? And you like, how do you get to those, right? And all of a sudden, like, you do something and you get to that.
It gives you that feeling of like when you play Super Mario Brothers for the first time, and you get up to the World 1 secret entrance thing.
Negative one, and you're like,
holy crap, this is the coolest
thing. Yeah, like -1. Was that supposed to happen? And I went to the wall.
There is a warp zone in this game.
There are
bouncy pads, and there are things that start rotating the world on its own, you know, so that you're not rotating. The world is rotating, despite you. And it just keeps layering on new
I'm going to go home and finish it tonight. I'm like really excited now.
So obviously, if you haven't picked up Fez yet, we're all in agreement that it's definitely an awesome game.
It's a special game. I really have some issues with just getting around and how.
All right, don't hate now.
Is
convinced. Don't hate now. You can hate it. You can hate another time. Right now, be Jeff Cannata loving things.
I do love it.
We have more things for you to love. And when we come back on the other side of this break, we can talk about some of them. There's a new James Bond game coming as well. And I don't want to wait anymore. When we come back, I think we'll dive into the Prey 2 situation. So stick around. We will be right back with more Weekend Confirmed.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. One such audiobook to consider is A Game of Thrones. If you're a big fan of the TV show, there's a lot of backstory in there that there simply isn't time to include in the show. So listen to the audiobook version. Go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
All right, folks, and we are back ready to dive into this one. So as you have probably seen reports on the internet, Bethesda issued a statement that Prey 2 has not been canceled.
Thank goodness.
Yay.
You say thank goodness. So
it was my game of E3.
I didn't remember that. It was your game of E3?
Or one of maybe two or three games of E3, yeah.
Interesting.
You know, I was blown away by that, what they showed.
What about it blew you away? That's pretty strong words.
Yeah, I like the first game, but it's nothing like the first game.
It's nothing like the first game.
So that blew me away already.
So to give you a little context, what was shown at E3 last year of Prey 2 was a bounty hunter on the other side of the universe, somehow taken there by the collectors, who are basically the Borg-like enemy in the game.
Important note, non-Native American bounty hunter. Don't get me started. That's my second thing I'm going to talk about later.
non-Native American bounty hunter.
Just saying.
And I think the key emphasis that they were making was that he would be a sort of hub-and-spoke world with a number of different NPC characters from which to get contracts and have, you know, different little quests and subquests going on inside this world that looked sort of
Blade Runner
and Acronox sort of mashup sort of thing in sci-fi.
So that's awesome.
That got you so excited.
Yeah, and what they showed was this awesome sort of combination of free running in a dynamic environment where you can complete quests in a number of different ways using a number of different tools at your disposal, traps and snares and weaponry. And it looked awesome. It looked like a game that I really wanted to play.
So how do you feel about this statement? Here's the statement that Bethesda issued. Development of Prey 2 has not been canceled, but the game will not be released in 2012 as planned. The delay is due to the fact that game development has not progressed satisfactorily this past year, and the game does not currently meet our quality standards. Prey 2 has shown great promise, and we regret disappointing our fans. We have made a substantial investment in game development to deliver the experience fans want. We are determined only to release the AAA game that fans rightfully expect and are unwilling to compromise our quality standards to meet a release schedule.
Hmm. Cool.
Cool?
I mean...
Ouch! Not up to our release standards?
Oh, you're just
standards?
Saying that's a dig against...
Dude, that's a pretty heavy smackdown.
Head.
I mean, if you say in public... development has not progressed satisfactorily this past year. That's like when you are in for your employer. That's like when you're in for your annual review and they like, and how are you doing today? Well, Garnet, you did not progress satisfactorily this past year. And that's why you're not working here anymore.
And we're taking your stapler.
Well, what's cool about it is that the game's not canceled and they want to make a AAA title out of it.
Yes. Okay. I agree with that. However, how much of, I mean, keep in mind that Human Head, when they originally were bringing Prey back, was under tremendous fire because that game was super troubled. I mean, go back to the history of Prey and then all the work they went through to get that thing done. And now they come back at it. And clearly, number one, in making Prey, there was both a tie back to we're going to be true to what Prey was about and make a new game. Ooh, I wonder if that ever crossed the thoughts of anyway, I shouldn't even say that.
Don't say that word. You're not supposed
anyway,
to say that word.
Duke Nukem only has a two
anyway,
if you say Duke Nukem six times in a mirror, something bad happens.
Before this thing falls off a cliff. So now it seems they have had a lot of creative ideas and energy there, a Human Head. So my question is, if, as we have heard from sources, the game is no longer being developed at Human Head, how do you feel about that?
Well, the fear is that it's going to be forced into a very specific first-person shooter box. At least that's my worry.
We don't know what's going to happen. So,
we don't, but that's my fear is that it was a little bit too quirky or unconventional and that it needs to be more of a shooter that is easily marketable.
So you can see the story on Shack News, but our John Kiefer has been investigating this with contacts in the development business and has been told from a source that development on this game actually ceased in November over some disagreement between Human Head and Bethesda over their contract situation. And while the two parties were attempting to work things out, evidently that sort of fell apart earlier this year, leading us to the situation we're in now. So when you read statements, you know, like, besides not progressing satisfactorily, we've made a substantial investment in game development. I mean, that's the sort of statement like, well, we just put a lot of money into putting a new studio on it. And if it goes to a new studio, what happens to the game? Because, look, at the end of the day, there was a creative vision for this that you guys, we all were excited about. And it's one thing to take the design documents and say, here's all this stuff we're excited about. But it's a whole other thing to then pick up that vision and execute on it. It's the sort of problem that StarCraft Ghost ran into as it moved through different publishers.
Yeah, because it's different people. It's different, you know, it's different energy. I mean, it's like, yeah, and what you were saying, I'm afraid of that. Like, let's put it into a box that's marketable and it's got to be this now.
Even if we're all in agreement, I mean, even if the four of us sat down here and had the design document for Prey 2 and said, we love this, and then we all went away and made a game, how similar would those games be? How similar
realistic
would
those
games
be? Do we really have to make a game? Oh,
yeah, mine wouldn't work. So
I know. It would be a bad game.
But I'm saying if we were in a game team, I mean, we would each, over the course of the process of developing the game, find mechanics that we liked, find pieces of the development that, you know, this is really speaking to me. I like the way the character system's working here, or I like the way the combat system's working there, or I like the way this quest system is working.
So whose creative vision is this going to...
That's a great question. We don't know.
Because that is going to determine ultimately the fate of this game. If it's just, let's put it in a box, get it polished up enough so that we can put it on a shelf for $60, it's probably not going to fare very well for anyone, gamers or sales. But
that's obviously not what's going to happen. Bethesda's not going to do that.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that way. But it is still very troubling that there's it's like, yeah, this project is going on without any sort of real head or leadership.
Yeah, who's
just
that
this nebulous studio like power is going to make this thing happen?
Well, if someone else has come into, I mean, the funny thing here is that I think that there's less reason to be really worried because of where Prey 2 was going, which was already a departure from where Prey was. So it already was, hey, we're just going to use the collectors and this idea of the Borg-like way they approach tearing apart worlds. And we're going to take you across the universe and do something different.
But that's what's exciting about it. I mean, if you had asked me if I would be worried about the state of a Prey 2 before I saw what they were actually working on, I would have been like, I can really take it or leave it. But now that I've seen that kind of bold new direction, which we all thought could have been had the legs to be a new IP, which it was so different. Now I am worried.
I'm just a little sore, like I said earlier, because like for me, that was really unique. I'm actually Native American too, so just a little bit on the side. But to have like a Native American guy, right, and he's actually like the hero, whoa, what's that about? Unless it's that what little super deformed guy, what, Apache or something.
You didn't, but, the cliche-ness of Tommy didn't bother you?
Whatever. I when I was playing it, I had fun, and I remember him swearing a lot, and remember the radio show stuff? For some reason, I just had a really good time with it. And whenever
Garnet gave it a 9.
Yeah?
I'm going to smack you.
Did you really?
No, I did really not give it a 9.
Anyways, I enjoyed it. I had fun. But
I did give it a good score.
Mostly I liked the fact that it was inventive. It was trying something new with that kind of, talking to the wind. And, you know, it's something interesting about the Native Americans.
I thought the spirit walking was really fun.
The spirit walking
was fun.
And then, of course, that radio show stuff.
It's kind of simplistic.
It was simplistic.
Yeah.
But it fit in the context of a shooter that worked at the speed that it worked without disrupting the game.
Yeah, it just felt different to me. And then when I saw that stuff, it looked awesome too. But it was just so different. And they're like, oh, we might put him, Tommy, I think his name, we might put him in that world somewhere and he'll show up, you know, make a cameo.
What I liked about it was the idea that, specifically the spirit walking, I liked the idea of you die, but
you fight your way back out.
Yeah, you just put in, you get put into a different mini game.
Yeah.
I think more games should, you know, we talk a lot about fail states, and that's a really elegant solution for it.
I agree 100%.
Put you in a different kind of game now.
Plus,
for a second,
you had a little bit of feeling about it too. It was like your grandfather talking to yourself. You know, it felt like that. And then when I saw this, I go, okay, it's the bald guy with, does he have a barcode on his head? I don't know. Maybe, you know, like
probably.
That guy.
Yeah.
And it's Blade Runner. And I'm like, oh, but it still looks cool. So.
Supposedly he was going to run into Tommy at some point.
Yeah,
right?
At least
there were some conversations about whether or not you would
he just
run
shows
into
up. Hey, guy. No, later.
Why they even called the thing Prey 2 in the first place?
I know.
I wonder.
Mystery, but
now I pray that it
I have my
out.
iPad here, and I'm wondering if I still have notes because last year I talked to some of the Human Head guys about their plans for the game, and I'm just going to check my notes here to see if I still have that back here in my. No, I've deleted it. How horrible. Isn't that awful? I wish I'd still kept it. It would have been awesome to have that to go back to. So that notwithstanding, what about the idea then of Human Head going to work? Did anyone play Rune? Any of you guys play Rune?
I did not.
Yeah.
All right. So I played Rune as well, which granted now is it 10 years old? It's old.
It's way older than I think it is probably.
So you might not want to go pull it out, but it was first person, third person, Viking
combat
game.
Yeah, it was,
and it was
awesome.
Kind of crazy awesome. Yeah. Not going to lie. It was kind of awesome. So they floated the idea recently on their Facebook page of what would you think a Human Head working on a Rune 2?
Hell yeah. Give it to me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Why you got to equivocate like that, Jeff?
Kanata's still like worried. You're
worried
about
Rune 2. I love this concept for Prey 2. I think it's a really strong
anything
idea.
Viking-themed. I mean, I think we just have a dearth of Viking-themed games, so.
And Native American-themed games,
correct.
Obviously. Hey, don't have enough
saying.
Of those to come back.
Just
well,
saying.
We will see what happens. I think that if they can get a great studio on this, they're still in fine shape, right? I mean, obviously, ZeniMax / Bethesda has significantly stepped up its game. If you look at were there contract disagreements, whatever they were, I'm sure that they were a number of factors involved, and that's not a kind of decision you make very lightly. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Now, obviously, they have other games in development, including Dishonored, which we all watched the trailer for. I can't believe you guys hadn't seen that trailer already.
It's awesome. I've been begging for a steampunk game for a long time.
They're knocking on your door. They're knocking on your door.
It's close. It's not exactly.
It's got some Tesla coil electricity shit going on in there too.
Railroad car kind of thingamajiggers, and those Stilt Walker guys are pretty cool design wise.
Half-Life 2.
Yeah,
or Half-Life. Yeah.
So Dishonored is coming from Arkane Studios. These are the guys out of Lyon, France. They have obviously a ton of creative talent there, but I think the thing that will get a lot of people excited is Harvey Smith is leading this project, and he was behind Thief. Mm-hmm. So Thief has almost legendary status amongst PC gamers for its ability to combine really quality sneaking.
Well, it invented stealth in video games.
In many ways, yeah. So, I mean, in Thief, you were, you know, crawling through the shadows with a bow and arrow equipped with a water arrow so that you could put out torches and create shadows. And it was all great until you dropped down and got attacked by dinosaurs and it went to shit.
They're making a new Thief, supposedly, right?
Yes.
There is a new Thief in development as well. Yeah. So let's not sidetrack to that.
Okay.
So Harvey is in on this. And then, as you guys noticed, also there's some Half-Life 2 stuff in there. The visual arts guy from Half-Life 2, if I understand correctly, is also working on this.
Looks a little like Half-Life 2 meets Saboteur meets Mirror's Edge.
Mirror's Edge, yeah.
So here's my concern is everybody who's seen this that I've heard talk about it, instead of saying, well, it's this, this, and this, says it's like this mixed with this. It's always, I played this game, I played this game, I played this game, and it's putting those pieces together. Why do you think that is?
Well, it has a lot of familiar concepts. I mean, we see the sort of free-running stuff, which is always exciting for me. But we also see time manipulation, pausing time, which is very common. I think the most striking thing that makes it feel familiar is the iconography of the city, and specifically the sort of pseudo-German iconography of their costuming. And it just feels
– it's an oppressive force versus it does – well, and I think a lot of people start drawing those comparisons because of – the development history of some of the folks working on it. Okay. So they're like, oh, yeah, I can see this. I can see the Half-Life 2 influences in this, or I can see, you know.
Well, Bioshock's one that I've heard referenced a lot, and I think that's by virtue of the alt history sort of feel of it. Mm-hmm. You know, modern era, mid-20th century of some sort, alt history with, like you said, the walking dudes. And then they have bows. They have bows, by the way. Also, like Crysis 3, they have bows.
Bows, you know, bows are the new lens flare.
But again, nothing in game. So why, you know, how far can we talk about this? It's just a cinema.
Well,
right. I think it's kind of
just an idea.
I think trying to show you that what it's going to be like to play.
Absolutely,
in the same way that the new Rainbow Six was kind of doing that.
Yeah, I think that if you take away from this character pieces, then you start to get some feel for what they were trying to show. Same thing that Bioshock Infinite did. I mean, sure. Look, here's a game where in the course of this we see parkour with the free running. So first of all, the story for Dishonored, which is the game we're talking about, there's a trailer that you can catch right now on Shack News on YouTube, is based around this guy who, nameless and faceless, I don't know, I didn't see a name attached, I don't know if he has a name yet. He does have a name because he calls him out by name.
Yeah.
I forget what it was. It's not that important yet. Anyway, he's been dishonored, clearly. he's had a political assassination pinned on him, and then somehow or other, clearly he escapes, and we see him escaping through the city.
And he gets some sort of brand on his hand.
Gets a brand on his hand.
A star brand?
A hand brand.
We come to find out. So you've got the parkour and like the free running, and then there's sort of maybe an Assassin's Creed element of escaping and running around on building rooftops and that sort of thing. But then when he busts into the room to take out the military lieutenant or whoever he is, he gets time stop.
Yep.
So, and he uses the brand on his hand, or at least it looks like the brand on his hand, to freeze time. And that, so obviously they're going to bring in maybe some sort of bullet time mechanic sort of thing. And I think they're also implying most likely a first or third person perspective sort of, you know,
seemed to me
action game dynamic.
First person,
what I was going to say. I think it's FPS or first person. But, I mean, it's a cornucopia really then in that way. It's like every game put together into
one. Thief was first and third.
Yeah, and it seemed to me too that the brand allowed him to do some sort of speed ramp, also shooting out the window.
Yeah, he jumped out the window because of his hand. His hand said, "Let's go out the window," and they did. And he did. He's got some
crazy sort of supernatural style powers.
That's cool.
There's cool electro tech. I think the game looks really cool. I'm almost disappointed that people were so quick to say, "Oh, it's like this," and I understand we want to have touchstones that we relate to or whatever, but I thought there was a lot of I was very excited by that. I'm actually super geeked by that trailer. Super geeked by that trailer.
Yeah, I mean, I think the world looks interesting enough to me that I hope it's not just an FPS. I hope that there's some more sort of – but that's the kind of games that I like, is more exploring a world and kind of having some more role-playing elements.
Conversation tree or two maybe.
How are you going to feel when Bioshock Infinite arrives and it's basically just an FPS?
Is that the case? I mean, BioShock is always...
Did you play BioShock?
Yeah.
Oh, but strong, aren't they saying it has like three or four times the amount of dialogue that
it's still going to be
I think the exploration is a big element of those games.
Yeah,
I
agree. BioShock had all those cassette tapes and all the, you know...
It was still a shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still a shooter.
I don't dislike shooters, but I just want an element of sort of exploration and you know, inhabiting a world that is interesting. And I think BioShock hits that nail on the head.
Okay.
Or at least the first two games did.
You know, I don't know if you're into the culture scene enough to do it or not, but that description is exactly one of the reasons that I still love Yakuza. And Jeff, I'm in chapter four now. You need to do some catch up.
Yeah, no, I mean, loving the game. I had a really awesome, very, very Japanese moment last night when I realized in chapter two. Okay, so there's a mechanic where you can basically, in the first chapter, capture events on the street via your camera and do these little mini games. We talked a little bit about it last week.
Each of the four characters has their own unique way of doing that.
Yes. So come to find out, the second character is like he'll see one of those events and then you trigger the thing and do the little QTE and then he whips out a wood block and a chisel and chisels like a fighting move, like a statue of the two guys fighting. And you're like, you've unlocked whatever.
Or a statue of like a bear with a fish in its mouth.
Yeah, if
you make the wrong choice.
And he's just like, bah, throws it over his shoulder or whatever. It is awesome, but it is like, what?
It's funny.
So, yeah. That's why I love that game. It's just so many of those moments where I'm just like,
we've talked a lot about story in games, and that's where I'm headed with this. We won't belabor Yakuza 4 a lot. Sometime when you finish it, I want to talk some more about it. I'm in chapter 4, and one of the things that really gets great is as the story continues to ramp up, the layer upon layer of infighting and intrigue and, you know, the sort of stuff that's very, you know, evening drama, soap opera sort of thing, the kind of thing you'd see on, you know, any number of hour-long dramas, either on premium or regular broadcast television, is in this. And it's funny because we can very easily start to say you get dismissive about those and, oh, the stories are always B-rate stories in games. And this is getting really
complicated. I see where you're going.
This is getting really complicated.
Tie them all together, baby. Tie them all together. You got it.
Coming down.
You got it.
Over the last weekend, a lot of people went and saw Cabin in the Woods, which is the latest Joss Whedon thing. I mean, I hesitate to – I don't want to spoil it. We've had this conversation earlier. Jeff Mattis has not seen it.
I have not seen it, no.
We're going to tread very lightly about the movie because we don't want to spoil it for him. However –
avoid the trailer.
Yeah, don't – oh, yeah. Yeah,
avoid,
yeah.
Avoid most trailers. Just saying.
Word. High five on that.
All right.
High five. What?
So it struck me and struck some of you as well in the thread for last week's show that there is a relationship here between the way we handle horror movies and their stories and horror games, and I would submit even adventure games, because the great thing about Yakuza is it goes through all this stuff and there's some – dude, there's like the amount of – corruption and backstabbing and people coming back from the dead that you didn't think were dead and you know, all that kind of stuff that happens in there is amazing. And I think they do a great job. Like the story in Yakuza really, really gets to me.
Oh, yeah,
and and I think that Resident Evil in a doesn't have the seriousness of it. But why do we just say video game stories? We just lump them into this bin and say, oh, well, they're all crap. They're all crap. And then
mostly they are.
But they're not almost. I disagree. Mostly. Why can we? So then why do we enjoy a Cabin in the Woods, a Phantasm, even Resident Evil, the movie? Why do we enjoy those and treat them as OK things to enjoy and not just throw them in that same?
Well, I don't think anybody's not enjoying video games. I'm just saying that they're not enjoying. I think we talk about this on TRS a lot because we're big fans of Uncharted, and I think Uncharted is kind of the poster child for really well-done story in video games. But if that was a movie or a book or a television series, it wouldn't be very good.
And they'd be the first to tell you that some of that is because they write the story around the action scenarios that they wish to set up for the game. I mean,
sure.
If you go back to Amy Hennig's GDC talk from a couple of years ago, she showed how they had these concepts that they had whiteboarded for cool adventures and then put them up on a whiteboard and rearranged them so that they could make a linear story progression out of them. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
No, you know, I mean, but I don't think Yakuza was developed in that manner.
No, I mean, Yakuza feels like a fully realized, interwoven script, almost like they took a novel and tried to break it apart into a game and go, how many different mechanics can we insert in here and how many different things can we do?
I think that's cool.
It is really neat, but it's you kind of, the pacing of that game is so weird because it really depends on like what you are actively doing at any given moment. Like last night I was running around looking for, you know, trying to find a store that would sell me milk for a cat that was in the subway that I'd run into. It was like, and had nothing to do with the main thing, but like it was sort of a.
Oh, that does sound like a movie.
Well, no, but I mean, no. Okay, I guess
it does,
that was a bad
It does
example.
A bit sound like a side. I think I'm just, here's your 5-minute break of tension.
I'm going to say that because there are two different art forms, right? So film, we've right. had all those different types of storylines. And if you want to go back and do this crazy like zombies and dogs, zombie dogs or whatever in action, and that's all it is, that's fine. But because video games have not, you know, progressed as long, and we haven't had those kind of great stories or documentaries or whatever, it's like that's why we're probably more hard on that, right? Because like
it?
Film, like, oh, I've had a really good film. Right. You know, really good content. And now I just want to watch this dumb horror movie, you know?
Well, I also want to be very clear that I'm not saying that video games should be like movies or TV shows or books.
No, it's their own thing.
Their own thing, of course. And but we're going to get to a point at a certain point where the level of storytelling in video games is going to be as nuanced and interesting as something you're going to get in those other mediums. We're just not quite there yet.
That's what I'm saying. It's early on.
Well, I guess what I would submit to you in part, though, is that we're very quick to say, oh, the story's crap, but – and then start talking about the game mechanically, what I did in the game to play the game. And that's cool, but if we're so quick to dismiss these lighthearted stories and games – look, movies – like Cabin in the Woods, there is no game to play. There is nothing else. You're sitting there for an hour and a half, 2 hours – to watch the story, which is a campy story, which is a goofy story. And I think that if you took that story, lifted it out, and put it into a game, we would be sitting here shitting all over it, saying, oh, this is so dumb. I can't believe how dumb this is. This is the dumbest story.
I don't know. I might actually play that game. I'm just saying.
Some of that, though, is like the inherent time commitment. Like you see a shitty movie and you're like, well, there goes 2 hours of my life. If you're playing a game, even if it's a short game, you're probably looking at, you know.
But I thought Cabin in the Woods was awesome. Right, right. Loved it.
I also think you would have, by necessity, the certain points in Cabin in the Woods would be punctuated by sequences where you're just kind of mechanically mowing through bad guys if it was a video game. And so you're not getting the same kind of story flow that you are in that other medium. And when those things can be better integrated and – I mean, talking about something like Journey, where the story is the game and the game is the story. There's no difference between playing it and telling the story. I think that's more what I'm talking about, where the game itself is going to communicate something rather than I play a little, then I watch a little.
Right,
then I play
right.
A little, then
it's
I watch
those
a little.
Levels of bad guys that's clogging the system, right? You just want to have it flow.
Like well, I think flow. That it makes it feel cheesier because you're taking this break and you're doing something that inherently doesn't have anything to do with the story being told. You know, it sort of just needs to give you like Alan Wake, for example. You know, Alan Wake is telling you this story, but then there's sort of these sections where you're just sort of mowing down bad guys.
You are sort of mowing down guys, I agree.
And I love it. I enjoy it, but it
interesting that you mentioned Max Payne, because I would say on the other hand Max Payne especially the first one was a pretty good game for keeping me engaged in the narrative while playing through the game. And another one that's really been good at it, God of War 3. God of War 3, even...
But again, a cheesy narrative when you get right
but
down to it.
But revenge stories are awesome.
Revenge!
Yeah.
You know?
But it's not told, like, it's not
more,
told with
more
any
cheesy
level,
than Clash of the Titans?
Listen, if you want to compare it to a crappy movie, go ahead.
Oh!
Are you talking about old Clash of Titans?
No, well... Oh. It doesn't.
It's the same
it does
story.
Not
it
doesn't well. Hold up. I know.
But then, if you're talking about the new Clash of the Titans,
it's the same story.
Yeah, very different. Very different.
If so you're talking by about virtue 80s, of the way it's presented,
it's a. I mean, okay. There's like three action sequences
how about,
in the first.
How about Jason and the Argonauts then?
Yeah. No. I like that movie quite a lot, but again, very differently paced than God of War, and not as cheesy.
Well, if
really isn't.
If the narrative is like conducive to, you know, killing tons of guys, it's not a big deal. Like God of War, yeah, he's going to kill a bunch of guys, but you know, you could heavy rain something like Cabin in the Woods a lot more effectively than you could turning it into a.
Heavy rain.
But
heavy
even
rain,
heavy rain
Cabin
doesn't
in the Woods?
Even heavy rain doesn't have a story that really would hold up in a different medium. It doesn't. It's kind of...
You don't think so?
I think it's a great game.
The
you
Origami
know that.
Killer?
But it's a kind of a B-level thriller.
Then what would you say separates a B-level thriller to an A-level thriller? Because as someone pointed out in the thread, there are very few Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, I was just going to say, A-level thriller, The Shining video game. Wouldn't that freak you out? Like Silent Hill, like 1 or something? Something that really just messed with you in a way?
Or
Eternal Darkness, right? Well, that's other things. Well, that's awesome. But something that messed with you, you know?
Yeah, Eternal Darkness was pretty up there.
What we're talking about is, you know, the best of the best in these other mediums.
Yeah.
Kind of are head and shoulders above the best of the best in our medium. But it's changing and it's progressing, but there's a lot of schlock in all the other mediums as well. So it's not like...
But schlock can be good. I guess maybe my point, my hypothesis that I didn't state well here is that schlock is not bad necessarily. Schlock can be quite good and quite entertaining and has a great spot.
Sure.
And going back to the horror movie thing, that I think that schlock's fantastic because it gives us this ability to enjoy these sort of stories that would be otherwise... We started talking about this, like, once you go dark, if Resident Evil was just dark, it would go so dark and so depressing and awful and terrible, like, just like, no one would want to play it other than the few people who are really into that sort of really dark, crazy story.
But you can be funny without sort of negating your own internal logic and creating this web of confusion that just sort of collapses under its own weight, which is what I feel about the Resident Evil
And they are
story.
Close to that. I agree with you that they're close to that. They are close to that. All right. All right, so we'll take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we will weave a new web of confusion for the rest of this Weekend Confirmed. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
It must sound a little bit like the beginning of Billie Jean.
I like how you went there.
I'll go with that.
All right. So you guys were threatening me. And
we're taking over the show!
Now is board game time.
I'm not even going to resist. Whatever. It's fine.
Resistance is, futile.
I'm going to go take 5, have a smoke.
Oh.
Actually, I don't smoke.
Dude,
so.
I'm going to convince you at some point that you will love it. Carlos, tell us about how you got
it's a good kind
assimilated.
Of
assimilated.
Yeah, and this
Carlos,
is a good
tell
story.
Tell us about how you got assimilated. By the way, how long have you been an Amway member? I'm sorry, a board game player?
Yeah.
There's a modern reference to Amway.
Amway. We're all 49 years young.
Dude.
Are we?
No.
Okay. So
we could play professional baseball, though, if we were.
So Shu, Dan Shu, everybody knows of the Shu, right?
Yes.
He was going to kill me if I don't mention that he's the one who adopted me into the board game thing, got me into it.
Now I know who to blame.
Yeah. No, who to cherish. It's awesome. Board games are awesome. So I was, and this is a really good story to kind of show why I love it right now. He was telling me we should play some, and there's so many different types of board games, the ones with deck building and cards are involved and some have tokens and whatever. The part where I have this kind of enjoyment from it and newfound understanding is I went to Games of Berkeley, which is in Berkeley. And I was walking through the aisles, and unlike a video game store where I kind of know what's going on, I didn't understand anything. Again, it was like when I was like 8 or something and walking into a video game store back then. I was like, wait, what is this? I've never seen that game. What? There's a military with science fiction and kind of – and then the card games section was the same way. And then, like, of course, the pen and paper section was like, what? That's a thing? There was a steampunk game.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying. So, yeah, for me, it was like this whole new wonderment of like – oh, the game could have tokens, you know, the game could, you know, be a card with no words on it, you know, like, which is that French game, I don't forget what it's called.
Dixit?
Maybe, yeah. Yes. And then there's Flux, of course, which the rules change when you play it. So I was already totally blown away, and then I went over to Shu's house and we played Thunderstone Advance, which is a game. And they picked that one for me because it's more like, you know, Dungeons & Dragons stuff. It's so fun to be in that new world of playing and learning a new type of system And of course, the social aspect of it is really fun. And then you start getting people who come in over a bunch of times every week or whatever. So for me, I'm just blown away by the nuances and the differences and just being in wonderment again about games.
Yeah.
Where I'm not that way with video games right now, it seems like.
Get on board.
So that's the beginning.
So I'm glad you brought up Thunderstone Advance because it's a really cool AEG game that just came out. Thunderstone, big franchise.
What's an AEG game?
It's the name of the company that puts it
out. Oh, okay. I was like, I thought it meant something.
It's an awesomely
It's a deck-building game.
Excellent.
Okay. So deck-building games were kind of started by this game called Dominion, which won a bunch of awards. A lot of people think get it confused, the deck-building mechanic, with something like Magic the Gathering, which, yes, you build a deck. But in these games, building your deck is part of the game. As you're playing, your deck gets built. Whereas
the important thing is you don't bring your own deck.
Exactly. Magic the Gathering, yes, you build a deck, but you do that, and then you play the game with the built deck. This is a game where building the deck happens as you play. So part of what you do, every card has a value and stuff that it does. So you buy it and you add it to your deck and then you shuffle and you find out what's going to be in your hand as you go. But then your deck is constantly changing. You're constantly adding things and removing things from your deck as you play.
So you don't really have any control over it.
No, you have absolute control over it. You're controlling.
Shuffling would seem to take that out of my hand.
Well, there's a randomization element, certainly, in the shuffling. But you can control how many of a certain thing are in your deck, so you change the odds at which you're going to draw that into your hand. And Thunderstone does a really cool thing. What it adds to the sort of Dominion formula is storytelling, as you said, Dungeons & Dragons. So you're actually going and fighting monsters. You're building up your army of guys. You're equipping them with weapons and provisions and things.
Right.
And then you're fighting monsters that come out of the darkness.
But the important thing is that you're picking when to do that, right? So, now I'm going to go to the village. I'm going to buy some stuff. I'm going to buy a sword or whatever for my guy. Now, I don't know when I'm going to get that sword because I have to shuffle it, and there's the random stuff. But you're kind of building your deck in that way, and you know exactly what you want to do. But now, I'm strong enough. I'm going to go to a dungeon, and I'm going to fight the monster. Now, I can go right back to the village the next turn to do something else. I can be in the village for 5 turns if I want. So there is that kind of like you're deciding what's happening with your deck. But there's also that random element. And that the kind of combination of that is awesome.
Yeah, and this is a franchise that's very big and has been around a while. And the really cool thing about Thunderstone Advance is they did a bunch of really small changes, smart small changes, that make it much more accessible for new players. They changed the way the board is laid out, so the village has placements, so you actually get a board that's kind of large and you have everything logically laid out. They changed a few key terminologies in the way the rules are explained so that things are much more clear. I remember having a very difficult time telling the difference between what's an attack and what's not an attack. Is magic
an
attack?
Oh, yeah, it felt so quick and easy to jump in this one. Yeah.
Now they label things as physical attacks, but they're physical. It's very smart. There's, as you said, new tokens that allow you to do certain things or keep track of certain
things. Experience points, you upgrade your guys. You upgrade your guys. Yeah.
But so why would, for you guys, would you rather spend 3 or 4 hours playing a board game than 3 or 4 hours playing Skyrim?
That's two different things, but obviously the social element, like me having fun with these, you know, people, like especially ones you have not seen for a while or whatever, and you're all having this kind of shared experience.
Okay, then World of Warcraft or something. Why? So
you're in person. Oh, there's a new idea.
There is something very fun about sitting around a table. I love the physicality of the bits. I'm a big fan of the sort of
cheese. The bits? You're a big fan of the bits?
Of the bits. Sorry. The fiddledy bits.
Naughty bits.
I love them.
I know. Bits is the bits.
And there's something very fun about sitting around in a physical location with people and physically dealing with things in front of you. There's something very fun about that. And usually these games have a very strong strategic element. Thunderstone's a great example. I have been playing this week, though, Nightfall on iOS, which is another deck-building game. And the key mechanic that they bring into that game is linking attacks together. So these cards all have different colored orbs on them that let you link other cards in your hand to them. So anybody around the table can link stuff to somebody's chain.
So is Nightfall for iOS a multiplayer game or a single player experience?
Both.
Okay.
It is based on a physical game that was put out.
Okay.
And it now is available on iOS, as almost every board game is.
Yeah.
They're all going
there.
That's
a whole new kind of thing, too.
I feel like while board games have always been a thing, there's always been a core crowd of people playing it, that especially in the last 18 months, the surge of board games coming onto, especially iPad, Because really, really was the iPad that became large enough to blow the idea up.
Yes. And the physicality really changed, of touch.
Has really changed the visibility of board games.
Absolutely. And being able to touch the screen brings that tangible element of
like the
moving
cards.
Stuff around.
Yeah.
Do you think that we're getting? I mean, I'd be shocked if someone hasn't done this already. How close are we to the era of playing board games where everyone brings their own iPad and puts iPads out on the table and the board game is played on boards with the board your tablet?
Oh, we're absolutely there, and there's a bunch of people working on hybrids of physical bits with digital bits.
Yeah.
So for me, I dig the fact that I can play board games on my iPad or iOS device, or Android for that matter. But it's never, ever for me going to replace what I love about sitting down there with cardboard.
Thank you.
So it's like a surrogate.
It's being able to practice, or it's being able to sort of feed that hunger when you don't have people around you to play with.
And it does become an addiction, because that's what I feel like right now. Once you get one, you're like, oh, well, that other game, I wonder how those mechanics work, and you want to get good at that game too. But it definitely goes back to the days of role-playing, you know, pen and paper, right?
Yeah.
Again, you can do that, I guess, on a iPad or whatever, but it's more about like getting those papers, like writing the things down, being with your friends. So that's the kind of stuff. I mean, I'm even toying around with the idea of doing pen and paper stuff again just because of this.
It's fun.
But I would disagree, because the one thing I would say – well, not disagree, but I would add to this. And it's not really disagreement. It's adding to it. I would say that the thing about D&D with people is that the rules were sort of just a guideline. And then you were really hopeful that you had a great storyteller playing the DM role, because if they did, then you would have like this really rich fantasy experience that was as much a collaborative storytelling experience from all of you sort of brainstorming this idea with rules.
Sure.
Yeah, I meant the similarities are just like the group together, and it's a social thing and it's a physical thing, you know, and that's why.
And of course, storylines emerge when you're playing anything. When you're playing tag, storylines emerge.
Yeah.
And honestly,
I guess so.
That I don't mean narrative. I mean, oh my God, that's what I love about board games, right? Is, oh my God, right before you were about to do that, did this thing, and then you had to do that thing, and oh my God. I mean, and you certainly get that with digital games as well.
Jeff, that just happened. So in the Thunderstone Advance game, Shu's girlfriend always wins, right? So that's the thing. And so we're all like, I wasn't like trying to team up. I was just learn the game. But near the end, there's like some sort of, what's he called? The bad guy at the end, like boss?
Yeah, there'd be several. There's a number of different bosses that can come out.
So there's the main boss, and if you kill that guy, the game's over.
Which is one of the big changes to Advance. Before, it was just pick up the stone. If the stone comes out, the game's over. But now there's a guy who holds it.
Yeah. So he comes up, and of course, I'm like, I don't think I could take him. But then, you know, with the randomness and with my picking earlier, I can. I think I'm going to fight this guy. And so I beat him, and it stops the game, and then his girlfriend loses. Because she couldn't make any more points. And then Shu won, so I only came in second. But Shu was so happy. And there was that moment, that, like you said, like, oh, you know, you just did that, and now that happened.
Right.
Well, you beat the monster, but you didn't win?
I beat the monster, and I didn't win, but I got second place.
How does that happen?
Because the points, you get points at the end of, like, victory points. It's a long story. Anyways.
My big complaint about Nightfall on the iOS and about a number of these games in their digital form is that they have the opportunity to do very effective interactive tutorials.
Yes.
And I think where these games often are lacking is teaching a new player how to play.
Well,
I
welcome to video games, by the way. Many of them are also lacking.
That's a very good point. But, you know, some of these rule sets are very complex, and I think a tutorial shouldn't be just stepping someone through the process of a round of play. It shouldn't be like, now tap here and drag your thing over there. I need to know why I'm doing that.
Dude, I feel like we were having a conversation that we had under a different template for every time I talk about a sports game from EA.
Mm. Well, it's the same kind of thing, right? It's very complicated rule systems, and that it's usually preaching to a choir of people who are very familiar with that. And so I don't think they understand that you can't deliver that information. You have to deliver that information to people that aren't familiar with it. And you have to give them context and circumstance so they understand why they're doing. Why would I make this choice over that choice? Not just that's the next choice to make.
Right. So the analogy of in a sports game, say, for instance, FIFA, which is awesome, not teaching someone who's not really familiar with football, soccer, exactly how to come down and set up just a basic cross.
Right.
Here's how you bring a ball up. here's how you move it through the defense. Here's how you set up a cross. And the reason you want to set up a cross is to get your striker in position to get a good shot on goal.
Yeah. A good example is when I was learning Thunderstone, right? They showed me how to play, but why would you want to play these things, right?
Yeah.
And like, we flip my cards over, I'll show you, you know? And mm-hmm. So it wasn't just saying, this is what you do and this is what you do. It was like, this is probably why you should do this. And don't do that, which I'm going to do every night. Like, don't do that.
It's interesting because board games are a little more akin to sports than they are to our typical thought of narrative games, right?
I would say so.
Even though
fair.
So since we're going to have this board game weekend.
Yes, it's happening.
Look, you're so gleeful.
I'm very
it's awesome.
Happy.
What are we going to play?
Well, I think the first game that I want you to play is Formula D because I know you're a racing fan. It's a very accessible game. It plays like real racing. You're going to love it. I guarantee you. It's amazing. It's a fantastic representation of racing, okay. And it's drama. It's board game drama. I mean, there's
I like that.
Literally like there is come from behind wins. That, I mean, it has a little
like
bit of
that.
A runaway winner problem, but you pass people like you would on a racetrack. There's dramatic like oh
wait cards.
There's a little bit of gambling of like
I like how you sell it to me like you're excited, but you know that my response is going to be
I know.
No, dude,
I was trying to be.
I'm telling you, it's going to be – there's a little bit of gambling of like, oh, my God. In order to pass him, I need to hit this roll of this die for this –
I think
I can do it.
That's
it's
cool.
It's a really cool game.
All right.
So and then from there, depending on your acceptance level of that game, I'll make a decision.
We should mention the website you were talking about that I'm going to be a part of now, right?
Oh, Board Game Geek.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite. There's really only one website you ever need to go to as a board game fan, and it's BGG. BoardGameGeek.com.
BoardGameGeek.com.
Yeah. If you play board games, you already know of it.
All right, so we'll give a report next week on board. I'm actually into this. You know I'm into the idea.
I know. We're going to have a lot of fun.
I'm joking around about it, but at the same time, I'm definitely into the idea of doing this. And
hey, and there's two, just real quick, there's two very recent board game episodes of TRS. Last week and the week before, we reviewed Belfort and Space Maze. So check those out if you're curious about some recent releases.
And although there's a group of folks who, when we talk about board games, bring up, oh, yeah, you should talk more about board games. If you're listening right now and you like the idea of us talking more about board games, mm-hmm. I will solicit your input right now. Get over there on shacknews.com, hop into the thread, tell us about what you'd be interested in us, how you would be interested in us covering board games, what sort of things you'd be interested in us talking about, and you never know.
Yeah, I played
never know what'll happen.
I played Aura et Labora this week, too.
Aura et Labora.
That sounds cool.
Or Ryan game of Rosenberg. It's a game about being creating a monastery and being monks. And it's
oh my awesome. God, I'm so excited.
But that's
so
what awesome. I'm talking about, see? Like yeah. Is that a video game? No, right? But you get to do that.
It's like, shut up, dude, you're taking a vow of silence.
And if you ever come to San Francisco, you'd play with Shu and I. We'll do a group.
Yeah. That has to happen.
Okay.
I don't get to play with you and Shu?
No, you don't get to go.
All right, fine.
No, you do because we want to convert you. Yes, you're invited.
Have it one way or the other, okay? You got to go one way or the other.
Right. We can talk about Trials now if you want. Or do you want to save that for?
Let's save Trials. Right. Let's save Trials. There's still some other stuff that I'm interested in. For instance, this is a quick one. Darksiders 2 has been delayed, and I'm not the least bit upset about that. Actually,
is it into 2013?
No, August. Hmm. So it's going to come out August this year, and I actually think this is a really potentially positive sign. And that may sound funny to say about a game being delayed. However, we all know that THQ's been in a lot of trouble. And they recently did their financials. And although they're still in a lot of trouble and have a huge cash problem, both Saints Row the Third and UFC did better than expected. Hmm. And Carlos plays UFC, which is exciting to me.
I love it.
Because my friend Corey loves him some UFC. And he didn't like the last one. And I was hopeful to get a talk to him about this one, which is Undisputed.
Yeah, and the submissions are kind of better. It's a different and weird kind of take on it, but I like it.
And I never got to talk to him about it because he got a new job, and he's been, like, I hardly ever see him now because he's traveling all the time. So did this get back to, like, the core of – were people excited about it? What happened? Why are people not – so UFC was a huge seller for THQ the first time around, and now it's hard to get anyone to talk about it.
I have no idea. I'm literally baffled on why that kind of bad press is for this game because
it got good reviews.
Right. But there was some weird stuff that came out like, yeah, we're off of it now. Like, we don't want to play it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, if you like the UFC, there's more characters. There's more – the submissions are more interesting.
Now, if you're a casual UFC watcher or you're not really into UFC, Is that, do you think, might be part of the barrier?
Here's what it, like, it might be a Madden thing, right? Like, right. I don't want to buy another Madden. And, like, the people who bought the first one, which was still pretty darn good, like, they were like, oh, I have all the characters I play. Yeah. And so, like, maybe they just didn't upgrade. You know what I mean? Like, right. Do you not want Madden 12 or
it
something?
It depends on how into it you are, right?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I want every new character. I want every new, you know, option because I'm a UFC fan. I'm a crazy UFC fan. So that's why I'd love it.
Has UFC declined in popularity any?
No, it's only insanely more.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's in all these countries. It's insane.
It's so weird.
So I have no idea why it wouldn't be selling as well.
I wonder if they'll try bringing it back. But anyway, those two games have helped THQ out tremendously, which means that Darksiders 2 is in good shape to allow time for it to be really good. Now, the problem with the problem inherently remains, which is that that game and the South Park RPG that Obsidian are working on, either one of them could be the last game that THQ ever makes.
Yeah, I read an article, was it EGM or something like that, about the whole kind of rise and fall of it. I mean, they were based on some, like, WWE titles for the longest time, right? That was like their cash cow. And then when that stuff kind of dried up, you know, well, they did smartly go to UFC. But other than that, like, yeah, what else can we say? Like,
yeah, and the legacy, in Ukes is still, you know, does the UFC titles in Japan. So, I mean, that's why those games are so solid there. Then they made some missteps. You know, they got behind the UDraw tablet. That didn't work out
for
them.
Oh, yeah. For UDraw tablet for Xbox, too, and PS3, and that's why.
caught on.
Yeah.
And they stayed with their, you know, they did a bunch of licensed games for a long time. They had,
and
like,
Saints Row can only go for so long, right? Like, I mean, I've already stopped playing it. It's pretty fun. But
the reason they're making money, evidently, is that the DLC for Saints Row has outperformed their expectations. So,
and I guess they just announced that the Warhammer MMO, 40K MMO, is not going to be an MMO anymore.
It's going to be a single player game now.
Yeah.
I was saying, what's the DLC for the Saints Row? I haven't actually.
Yeah, we were trying to.
What is it? Why is it so good?
Just name an item and then add dildo at the end.
Oh,
it's hooker dildo. Wait, that's.
Yeah.
There is someone right now typing a post that is the, this is why Garnet should play blank, and it's usually like insert game name. And a lot of folks did tell me that I should play Saints Row the Third because
it's fun. It's just fun.
Especially in multiplayer, it's wildly fun. Zav and I were playing it for hours. It was awesome.
I tell you what, I am a little more inclined to play Darksiders, though, because that's been on my list.
Oh, it's
on my
so pile for awesome, dude.
You haven't played the first one?
No, and Ariel started playing it.
It's
and
so good.
It is. It really is.
It's Zelda.
It's really
that's
cool.
What I was going to say. The way they sold me on it, Zelda.
And everyone says that, but like the depth to which it actually is Zelda is
you don't think
sort
so
of
right
astounding.
At the beginning. Because you start playing and you're like, oh, wait, no, this isn't Zelda. This is like God of War.
Yeah.
It's shitty right. God of War ripoff.
But then you start going to the dungeons.
It isn't. It's awesome.
Yeah. I'm really impressed by that. So I'm curious how much that's going to hold on as they move into the new character. You know, so they're changing the new writer is
Death.
Yeah, Death.
Instead of War.
Yeah.
It's just going to turn into God of War and be like, oh, where's Zelda? That would suck.
They won't do that.
Okay. They won't do that.
They won't do it.
But there's a tremendous amount of pressure on them, and I think giving them until August to get this game done is probably a godsend. It gives them a little breathing room. Obviously, the pressure is super on them in the first place, so a little bit of extra time to get that game right.
So this late,
I have great hopes for them.
This late in the dev cycle, though, I mean, I'm honestly asking this question. Like, how much do you think they can do?
Polish. It's all about polish.
I mean, it's got to be,
that's,
right?
That's the beauty of getting a little reprieve at the end is it gives you extra time for polish and especially great time for QA and final tuning. So in a game like this where it's combat action, there's right. still a lot of room to tweak how is the AI on each of the difficulty levels. You know, are we getting all of the animations in there we wanted to? How's our clipping? What do you call it?
Collision clapping. Detection.
Collision detection. Yes, thank you.
I like how I got that somehow. You're like, that's collision detection.
How well is our collision detection working on everything? And then just, you know, pounding on it over and over and over. Make sure every quest works. Make sure every context is correct. Make sure that everything in the game works the way it's supposed to work. So when it comes out, it's a great experience.
I, in general, love August release dates.
Yeah.
Because it tends to be a time where I can really focus on a game. You know, there aren't generally a lot of August release dates. I mean, I'll probably still be playing Diablo, but.
August is why would you be doing that? Diablo, that's not even a game that's very good. Remember, it's going to be terrible.
But I feel like I have so much time in the summer and I can devote it to playing.
It is amazing how much detail with polish can be added, though. Because I was, long time ago, I was a tester for like a second. And,
really?
You know, we finished the build.
Where'd you test?
It was Visual Concepts. Yeah, we did NBA games. I did some of those.
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Interesting.
And so when we finished, we were like, you know, this is pretty much done, but like the graphics still are, you know, a little. And then it would come back and be like, wow. You know, like new sweat drops and new...
New sweat drops!
New sweat drops. That was our tagline. NBA 2K6, new sweat drops. But yeah, and
but
so
it
it's amazing
like
how much polish can happen.
I mean, think about as games that you've looked at, you know, in press demos, how often it... Those last couple of demos you get, it's like night and day differences.
Yeah, absolutely. As, that's true.
You know, a little more time to work on special effects, a little more time to come in and add another layer.
Shading. You know?
All that kind of stuff you can go in
shading,
and do.
Just which, saying.
And given the art style of Darksiders and the competition it'll be up against, I think that could be a real boon for them. I think
absolutely.
It'd be a real boon for them. So what else we got coming out this fall? The recently announced 007 Legends.
Yeah, interesting.
You had the same response I think a lot of people had. So 007 Legends was announced. This goes along. So for those unfamiliar with what's happened with James Bond, MGM went through a bankruptcy, and the Bond license for the films was tied up for a long time.
It's also why Cabin in the Woods didn't come out.
Because of...
It's been done for 2 years.
Really?
Because of MGM, yeah.
So, but wasn't that like Whedon's pet project that he got to do because he went and did Avengers?
I don't know.
I thought there was some relationship
there. That's the case. I know that the film has been, for all intents and purposes, done for 2 years.
That. That's interesting. So that's all finally cleared up, and we're going to get Skyfall, which is Bond 23.
Wow.
This fall, I think. Anyway, that's coming out in November, and not any big surprise, we're going to get a game to go along with it. And the game is this new game from Eurocom, who did GoldenEye Reloaded.
Better than Halo.
I feel like Spicer should
Thank
be here.
You,
I do feel like Spicer should be here because he was a big proponent of the game, and he got me to try it out. And I will say this, that it was a fun game. It was a really fun game, especially because my expectations were about at the very lowest point they could be, so it exceeded them. But I like Bond games. Look, I think Bloodstone was a blast. Bloodstone was Bizarre Creation's last game, and like it had some problems. It wasn't that long, and the multiplayer was sort of throwaway. But man, like, as a Bond game, I had a great time with that game. The stealth takedowns were really good. The cover mechanic was sort of like everything else's, but I really like Bloodstone. If you haven't played Bloodstone, I'm sure you can get it on like the super dirt cheap.
Yeah,
and it's a fun Bond game if you like Bond game. I'm sure you can find a copy someplace. Anyway. 007 Legend is this idea of the heroic legendary moments of Bond over six films, with the sixth one and the culmination of it being in Skyfall. And
do we know which six films?
We don't know which six films. And one of the struggles I have with this is the Daniel Craig movies, if I understood the idea behind them right, was especially with the Casino Royale,
prequels.
Was that they were all earlier era ones.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to figure out, like, where do they pull from? I guess they could pull all from old ones.
Well, the thing that confuses me is this idea that there's going to be some kind of crazy overarching story that weaves them in.
Some kind of crazy overarching story that weaves them all together.
I'm betting the story is you play a guy who walks into a multiplex for a James Bond marathon.
And then you are him.
You walk into each movie. I'm going to theater three. Parts.
I'm just frightened about the potential for six shooter based boss fights.
Ooh.
Because
you have to shoot the hat as it's coming towards your face.
Depends.
And then
you have to
shoot Jaws off of the.
So we really don't have any faith in Bond games anymore, do we?
No.
It's a shame. I think that's really a shame because really, I think that. In the big, you know, looking at our, like, going back in history eyeglass, you'll say, oh, GoldenEye was awesome. And all the other Bond games, they kind of stank.
Well, I'll tell
you, I don't think that's really accurate.
It's a moment in time. That's why. How do we go back to a moment in time? Like, that was like, a moment, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. You
pre
can look
some
at,
other show, pre some other games and stuff.
You can look at a lot of other series and look at those games and say, oh, I liked those games. Those were good games. I mean, we don't have any problem touching on classics all the time.
But
in this
they're
show.
So disparate, right?
And none of
there's
them
so
come
many
that close. Like none of them have been.
I don't know. Right? Yeah.
Since I mean, really, right? I mean, I haven't played all of them all the way through, or even most of them. Probably.
It's kind of like saying, judging the Simpsons games as a whole. You know, it's like, wow, Simpsons games are so uneven. It's like, yeah, but there's like a shit ton of different ones, and they're all doing different things, and they just, the only commonality is that they have the Simpsons.
Well, there also wasn't any good Simpsons
games. Yeah, they all
I remember playing one in the arcade that I freaking loved.
Oh, the beat 'em up. Okay, yeah, never mind.
I think that's all struggled to get out from behind the shadow of GoldenEye, and GoldenEye was unique in that it was a great shooter on the Nintendo 64, which made it really unique.
That's
and
what I'm saying,
they
yeah.
conquered the controller, they conquered the platform, they gave you four-player split screen, and because of those unique elements, it was sort of more than just a Bond game.
Right.
Yeah, it was at that time. We were like, whoa, all this is coming together. This is amazing.
Look at all the Bond stuff you can do.
It's tough to do a spy game, too. Let's not underestimate it. It's really difficult to do a spy game, because while we've proven that it's easy to run around with a gun and shoot dudes, it's a lot more difficult to do a low body count, high investigation, you know, lots of story elements.
Please, Thief 3, be that game. Mm.
Yeah. I just want a No One Lives Forever sequel. That's what I want. I'll kickstart that shit.
Oh. Yeah.
Show me where to donate.
It'll work.
No One Lives Forever except this game.
I would like a Shogo sequel. I would really like Shogo 2. Yes. I would really, really, really like Shogo 2. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, we have one segment left in this week's Weekend Confirmed. Stick around when we come back. We still have Trials Evolution to clean up, and I don't know, whatever else. We've got some. We've got comments from you guys. You
Ultima.
Guys
want to talk some
And Jeff has an indie game or two, right?
Oh yeah.
Well, I talked about Fez. That's my main.
That's
one.
Your indie game.
I got another couple little ones I can bring up.
All right. Stick around. We'll be right back to wrap her up.
Do you like games such as Mass Effect, Gears of War, and Uncharted? Then you will love Weekend Confirmed. What really gets me jazzed? Weekend Confirmed. What really gets me jazzed? Sherry Birkin. What really gets me jazzed? Sherry Birkin. Do you remember Sherry Birkin? Of course. That shit crazy. Sherry Birkin. That shit crazy. Sherry Birkin. That shit crazy. That's true. That shit crazy. Stupid fun is the Sherry. It really gets me jazzed. That's true. The moment to moment. That shit crazy. Chills and thrills. Yay! That's never bad. Then you'll love Sherry Birkin, Wrath of the White Witch. Sherry Birkin, Wrath of the White Witch. Sherry Birkin. That shit crazy.
Wait, but it shouldn't be a bow. It should be like at least like a crossbow.
Bows make absolutely no sense. Crossbow. You have a better memory of that than I do.
It's but, just a dream.
Max Headroom slash great. Fallout sort of vibe going there. It's Sherry like awesome.
That was awesome.
You know, one thing I thought of because we were talking about Obsidian during the break is I started playing Alpha Protocol once, and it had some issues, and I believe it's been patched since then. I'm tempted to maybe go back and play that now.
I played a shit ton of that game.
Did you? Did you like it?
I had problems with it, but I liked a lot of it. I liked a lot of the ideas in it.
I'm tempted to go back and reinstall that on my computer and see.
Didn't you have major problems? You were like railed against it.
Yeah, I had major issues with AI and.
Well, you have this vision of the perfect spy game that you.
I do have this vision. I do have a vision of the perfect spy game. You are 100% correct. I'm a huge spy fiction nerd, and there has to be a way to do that, and I don't feel like any game has completely gotten its head around that. I mean, I think that a lot of times I've heard designers talk about this and be like, oh, well, you know, the thing about a Bond movie is he never really kills that many people, and that's not really good game mechanic, and that's fine. And I don't think you have to go all the way to that extreme. I think that you do need to get, though, because it's still changing the dynamic of the game to the point where every time you do kill somebody, it's really meaningful. Like, it doesn't have to be super, oh my God, powerful, I just murdered a person, but it needs to be more powerful than I just mowed down 30 dudes on the way to the control room for the missiles.
Do you think this occurred to me when Jeff was talking about Yakuza. Has there ever been a game / could there be a game that didn't have a sort of baseline activity that it goes back to, that literally each section of the game plays completely differently
and you never return to that? I don't know, because in our conversation earlier about movies and games and books and everything having its thing, I mean, part of what we understand about the way we do games is that there is something I'm playing, right?
Yeah.
And so even in Yakuza, since you use that as an example, there's a very important part of I know how I'm adventuring and I know how to get into the fights. And then what's weird, and I think that having spoken to some people in Yakuza, after you finish the game, you can go play it again, Game Plus, right? And then there's so many things to do on the side. And the things to do on the side in the context of the main game, it's really hard to get to go do them because they become sort of distractions. And I would worry that in an even larger sense that if I'm doing something and then I never do it again, that every time I change, it's like, well, what did I invest the time to learn how to do that for?
Well, like in a movie, for example, there's a car chase.
Yeah.
But there's usually just that car chase. So what if in a video game you get in a car and use a driving sequence?
But you have to learn how to do it.
And from a game, and in a game, from a game perspective, there have been games that have had the obligatory whatever vehicle sequence,
usually bad.
Yeah, and they're usually bad, and it's because either A, the engine's not equipped to do it, or B, it's like, oh, we need a little extra thing, and Team B has been working on this, and so let's.
Yeah, I guess if you're jack of all trades, master of none. If it was like you're hopping, you there's a car sequence, then there's a shoot sequence, then there's a chase sequence. It could be. It could be all those things, but none of them would probably be great.
I feel like those are Atari games.
Yeah, it'd be
games,
harder to make.
Like Atari 2600, you had games like that. You're like, you're in a tank, and now you're in a plane. And
then you're
on the ground, and you're like, oh.
Exactly.
Even Yakuza has that as well, because, so, for instance, there's this mechanic in the game for chase sequences, and they're
bad.
They're really not that good.
Yeah.
They sort of highlight some of the weaknesses in control accuracy and getting hung on geometry, and they're just not a lot of fun, and they go back to them not that often, but when you get one, every time I get one, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I got it down now.
Same exact, it's just like, oh, God, okay. This will be over quickly, but.
And so I would worry about that. I would worry about, like, you know, coming into a game and then not being able to.
There are certainly pitfalls to the concept, but I think it would be an interesting thing to explore. Where
it would be interesting to explore
the variety of gameplay. You're moving through a sequential story that requires you to do certain different things that never repeat.
And I feel like if you didn't make the jumps as big, it would be better, right? We're talking about car mechanics, like that's different than whatever your guy walking around.
Right, right.
So I think if you had them closer together, and then just more, you know, like almost with Fez, right? Like, oh, that's now right. I'm doing this now. Like, that's a thing. You
I
know,
think it would be kind of cool if you did that and then additively, as the game progressed, you know, came back to things and incorporated, oh, well, I learned how to do this and now I know how to do this so I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's sort of the antithesis of Trials Evolution, which is all about
Master of the Segment.
Nice.
Mastering.
Dean Kamen over here.
What?
You are Dean Kamen.
There should be like a sound effect when you do that transition. Like,
you shouldn't disrupt it like that.
I'm sorry. It's just so good. I can't not point it out.
but the thing about Trials, and the reason people who adore Trials HD and will likewise adore Trials Evolution, is that it is a game that rewards you for spending hour after hour after hour perfecting not just your ability to play the game, but your ability to control a bike on a track and learn every nuance of it.
I have an important question for you. So you like this game?
I cannot fucking decide whether I like it or despise it.
It's compelling in some way.
And that's one of the things I did definitely want to talk about, is that I'm a hyper competitive person, and I really should not pick up games like this because I just they burrow right into my head.
So it does have the multiplayer, you know, beat your friends component.
Yeah, which is fun. Actually, it's a little lighter.
But like Super Meat Boy.
Yeah.
Very sort of similar, you know, design sort of what it makes the player go through.
Yes.
Like you hit walls and you're like, okay, I'm never going to beat this. I'm never going to beat this. And then you do.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not as big of a fan of that as, say, I just got the impression that you were higher on this game than say, Super Meat Boy.
Super Meat Boy doesn't speak to me, and I'm not sure whether that's entirely because of its aesthetic or because I think that let me sort of try and define the differentiation point that I think is the bigger piece to it.
Okay.
Super Meat Boy comes down to really great eye-hand coordination and dexterity and understand and mastering, you know, timing and jumps, and there's a very specific hitting it just right nature to it.
Just defined Trials Evolution, by the way.
Not exactly. Because the thing about Trials is that there's a fluidity to controlling the bike and all of the different ways through a level that you might make a little mistake, but if you're good enough to save it, you can turn that little mistake into a backflip. Did you just see what fucking happened?
I just did
that
a backflip,
was amazing.
Didn't intend to. Did not intend to.
That's actually the number one thing that happens is backflips.
But then land it,
Yeah, and then and keep going.
Yeah. Right? And that little twist of difference there, and there's so much, you know, like when you're like the thing about Trials HD. So first of all, Trials HD is like a very high tech version of Excitebike. You know, you're not moving, you're not steering left and right. The entire play of the game focuses on two things: mastering gas and brake to control your speed, and then the bigger piece, which I think is sort of like step two of learning Trials, is managing your rider's push pull dynamic and pushing and shoving the bike around.
Well, it's where he shifts his weight.
Weight shift, yes.
Yeah, it's where he places his weight in relation to the bike.
And figuring out that the biggest bike is not always the best bike for everything, because the weight of the bike does figure into it, and how much you can spin it and how much you can shove it. And then, like, getting accustomed to, like, when I come off a ramp, remembering, oh, that's right, I got to push forward, because I push forward, that, you know, gives me that little shove. And then an interesting balance comes in. And this is like, I've been like breaking this down in my head because I got back into the Trials mode. It's like, one of the things is that if you think of a physics of a swing, when you push yourself forward on a swing, you're waiting for the return to swing back the other direction, right? In Trials, when you shove yourself forward, you can get that big shove forward. And then instead of snapping back, if you time it right, you can get your rear wheel on the ground and apply power and power your way on out of the reverse, what would be the, instead
which
of snapping
like
back.
Bike. That's like Excitebike.
Right.
Remember? Yeah.
So it's a constant dynamic of like knowing when to push forward, knowing how to get your wheels down. And I love it. I love it, but I hate it because then it's like just so infuriating.
Well, to your point, Jeff, I never played the first Trials. Dan Trachtenberg on TRS is a massive fan of this.
But oh, really?
He loves games that punish him for some reason.
And it is punishing.
He loves N+. He loves all those kinds of games. I find them, for the most part, infuriating and just had no desire to put myself through that. I mean, one of his favorite games of all time is Stunt Driver. Is it Stunt Man?
Oh, that's
Stunt
a terrible
game. It's a terrible game.
That is a terrible game.
One of Dan's favorite games ever. So I avoided it like the plague, the first Trials, right? I played the demo and I was like, ooh, this is not going to be fun for me. And then Garnett said, have you played Evolution? And I had no desire to play it. He's like, no, you got to play it. So I downloaded it and I started playing it. Right. And to my utter shock, I'm hooked. Totally hooked on this game. And let me explain why I think that is. And it may be similar with Super Meat Boy, which I have also never played.
Okay, well,
we have
a mission for you.
Yeah.
God.
I have said many times, in fact, I wrote a blog post about this once, that I think there is a direct proportional relationship between the amount of frustration I get with how long it takes to reload a level.
Oh, wait, Trials has great reload. Trials is
perfect.
Oh, it's perfect. Boom.
Perfect.
Yep, you're done. Yeah. Let's go. Yep. Let's do it again.
It's somebody said that, you know, Brad at Giant Bomb. So I'm looking at our, and this thing has great stat tracking. I'm looking at our stats the other night, and I've been playing like half an hour or less, and then I go and look through somebody else, and it's like number of restarts. And I looked at his restarts, I was like, holy shit, it's like 400 and something. Like,
oh, easy.
But he's a super pro.
Yeah.
He's super, and that's what it is. You get into that super perfection loop.
It has the perfection loop. Like, I will not let myself finish without if I have crashed, I won't let myself finish. And secondly, it does that other thing, which is nefarious, which is it has the little dot of fucking gamer tag and Dan's gamer tag. And they just go zipping past me. And I go, motherfuckers, I have to restart until I figure out how the hell I'm going to do it.
It's so crazy.
But it's so key for me. It is so key that when I push that restart button, it goes boop, boop, and I'm in.
Oh, that's not a problem that you'd have with Super Meat Boy either. It's instantaneous, and because it's like, you're going to die.
Yeah.
Like 50 times later, you finally made it.
I actually love that in Fez, remember?
In Fez,
you fall off a cliff, and you're like, oh, that's fine, you were right there.
But that game is like milliseconds too long.
Oh my goodness, that is, that's nitpicking it, but
definitely nitpicking. Yeah. It's very forgiving, and I appreciate that about it. But even that one, I have to wait for it to go, like, just fucking let me start again.
How's it go again?
I'm curious to see what you think once you get up to like the third tier of bikes and medium tracks, because
I just started that right before I left for here. I just did my second medium track.
Did you do roller coaster yet?
No.
Oh, do you roller coaster?
The
is
first
awesome.
One, the first one, which is
I know,
it's called like Journey or some crap, or I can't remember, but it's like there's a bunch of water and you have to. The thing that's so brilliant about the game is that going fast isn't the way to go fastest.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you have to be nuanced. You have to slow down and make a certain jump go slower so you can land on the right
place.
Learn
the tracks.
Learn the tracks.
So you guys haven't hit that wall that I hit in the first Trials where you get like you know, a good chunk of the way through the game, and then you're just like, man.
It's impossible now?
I am just never, ever in a million years going to get this.
You'll hit it, but you will.
I probably will stop playing at that
point. You will get it in a million years, but it'll be a million. Like,
right, it'll be a million
years. And that's
the
thing that I think people, if you go look at the Trials community, that's what people love about the game, is that you can take as much of it as you want, right? And you can keep going to perfect. But they've done such a good job at the difficulty curve of their level design that they keep going. Like, there's no real end to how far. Like, if you push yourself and actually gold everything through expert, you'll be like, wow, okay, I won.
Let me ask you this question. Yeah. Does the game – what I really like, too, are the license challenges where you have to do more sort of, for lack of a better term, gymnastics with your bike. Where it's not just progress through the level as quickly as you can.
Well,
it's
have you more done like any of the, have you done any of the fun games at the bottom left yet?
No, is that where that lives? Because those are really cool, where you have to go back to go forward, and you have to sort of hop. It's basically like that old movie Rad with BMX bikes, which I freaking love.
Which is an awesome movie. Yes.
Where you know,
there's a trials mode that you'll unlock soon that has even more crazy, just more of like obstacle course instead of race.
Yeah.
There's like little mini games. Like one of the ones you'll unlock very early is you'll get to go play with skis instead of a motorcycle.
Amazing.
And it's like you're skiing down a dirt ski ramp sort of thing. And
I saw you've done like 150 challenges, something like that, right? You've done a lot of them.
It's kind of addictive, yeah. I've been up late play. That's another thing. It's a bad game for addictive personality because you will so zone into it.
Yeah.
And
as you say, you'll learn the track and you'll get to a point where like, okay, I can do that. I know what I need to be for that. I know where I need to be for that. I know what positioning is for that. But what the fuck do I do there? Shit.
I think okay.
Dude, there are parts where I have done that is so true because there was a track late last night that I was trying to get past and I was like, how do I slow down enough on this ramp to be able to land off the ramp short enough to get a run up to this next ramp because I've got to get a run to the next one to be able to do a flip to cross the score. I'm like, how do I? But I'm like processing this long chain of physics.
Do you have any general notes, general tips? Because one of the things I noticed just by watching other people's orbs, and by the way, brilliance on their part that it's not ghosts, that it's actually just orbs, because you don't get the information of how they tilted their bike.
Right,
don't get – it's not like, oh, I see how they did that. You just see, fuck, they did that. How the fuck did they do that?
Yeah.
So I noticed in a lot of them – and maybe this is just bike selection. Maybe people went back with better bikes and redid the courses. But a lot of people were just shooting out ahead of me right at the beginning. I don't know how to get a good start.
Yeah, if they're shooting out ahead of you, they probably are using especially in the lower levels, they've probably gone back with a
better
higher
bike.
CC bike.
Yeah, so that's lame.
So that's probably one of them.
Because the thing I appreciate –
it's not lame because you can go – that's part of the game. So keep in mind, 3 weeks from now, as people are still refining and refining and refining, going back and tweaking each one of those levels and getting a better and better run is why that this game is all about that leaderboard. It's all about getting your name above somebody else.
I totally get that, and I'm hooked in that way because just seeing my friends on where I position among my friends is key. But what I like about it, what has hooked me, is that it is a pure skill. It is a pure skill-based game.
Skill-based,
but then when it's like, oh, well, they just used a better bike than I did. Then it's like, well, fuck that.
The bikes are so easy to unlock.
Yeah,
the reason it gives them to you in that mode in the method of like through a progression is because you need to learn how to ride each one of them. Mm. You need to have some time with them, and by the time you get everything unlocked and then you're getting really good, you're going to pick a bike like either the top one or the next to the top one that you like for its weight and acceleration combination, and then you're going to get really serious about going through all the tracks again and laying down your best times.
Do you guys remember that really weird like Avatar game that was like Wipeout or something? Or like, you know, where the people get knocked off into the water? What's that? Is that Wipeout show? Wipeout or whatever?
There was an Avatar
game for like that, remember? And that had that same thing.
Avatar?
Xbox 360.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
and
that's the same thing.
Navi?
I was like, how did my friend do that? Like in 1 minute, you know, he got through the whole thing like, oh, I have to keep restart. It was kind of quick, and I was like, I'm just going to do that again real quick. Pac-Man did a little bit the same
thing. You said general stuff?
Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you too.
You've already figured it out. Don't hold the accelerator down all the way, all the time. Makes no sense. As a matter of fact, know exactly why you're holding the accelerator all the way down when you are, because the rest of the time you shouldn't be holding it down all the way. Be really conscientious about when you want to launch yourself and when you don't want to launch yourself, and pay really good attention to, especially if you're coming off a ramp – and you know you're trying to – like keeping your momentum going. So knowing where you're going to land, what angle of attack you want to hit when you land on. So if you're coming up to an incline, keeping your nose up and your back wheel down first so that you can get that back wheel grinding and getting power going.
In general, do I want to land parallel to the surface or do I want to land with my back wheel down first? in order to
depending on the angle of the ground that you're landing on, you're probably for maximum speed,
which is always what I want.
Not necessarily, though. That's the point, right?
That's a tagline by its own.
For maximum speed, you're going to want to land with your forward momentum carrying you across right, left to right, and the back wheel coming down slightly before the front wheel, and you getting on the gas, but not all the way. Because remember, on a bigger bike, as you get a bigger bike,
flip your ass.
If you yank that trigger. So that's the other thing, is really learning how to moderate your gas.
Yeah.
And using that as that's your core strength.
I think the key to me—
And air balance. It's all about air balance.
It is. The key to me falling in love with this game was, A, those quick restarts, and B, the fact that I didn't play it right away. That I played it a little bit after five or six of my friends, so that right away I was starting those matches with your orbs out there. Mm. Because if I was just doing that in a vacuum without anybody else being better than me, I would not be as hooked as I am.
I could see that. I could see that. So I think the beauty, and we haven't talked about it at all yet, and maybe we'll talk about this some next time, because I think you haven't said a word about multiplayer.
Oh, I played multiplayer, and it's really fun. The motocross stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, it's really fun.
So here's
smartly designed. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Why do you think it's smartly designed? I'll tell you what I love about it.
Well, it is the fact that that when you crash, it penalizes you at the end, so that it never falls in the trap of a lot of racing games where it's just I have to split the screen, I have to do all kinds of weird graphical gymnastics to try to figure out how I'm going to keep both people on the screen, and that I never feel like I'm behind you. When I finish, I can finish ahead of you, but then the penalties come later for how many times I crashed.
Yeah. I can't restart multiplayer. And I love it for that, because I play the game. I enjoy the game and I play it differently, because I've already gotten to that point in the single player where it's like literally sometimes even off the first jump, I'm like, oh, I'm already hitting start. Like I hit the first jump and like I'm in the middle. I'm already hitting start to restart the game.
Lovely reset loops. Yes.
Right. Because I've already figured out I got to reset it right here.
Yeah.
But I can't do that in multiplayer. So multiplayer, you just get what you get, which to me opens up some of the fun of just fucking around with the bikes, flying through the air, doing what you can with the stunts, and making the best of a run instead of trying to make the best run.
Yeah.
And it's such a great palate cleanse and change of the way I play the game that I like that a lot. I really like that a lot.
Which is what I was going to say, why I think people like this game so much is because, unlike Super Meat Boy, it's physics, right? At the end of the day, when you watch someone sit down and play Trials, they're like, oh, no way. And like I did multiplayer, like GDC or something like that. And everyone's like, oh, what? How did that happen?
Yeah.
It's having fun with that physics, I think, really helps. Right. Of course, there's an art to it, but that's that's a draw for me. You know?
Dude, when you hit roller coaster and you see where my dot is, you're going to flip because I hit one of those, like, and you also it also has like sort of like golf like element to it almost, where like, you know, you'll hit if you ever played golf, even if you're not good, one day you'll hit that shot and you'll be like, shit, that's why I came to the course.
Yeah.
Like I hit that run on roller coaster and I was like, whoa, that's amazing.
The worst is when you're like 90% through that run, you're like, this is the most amazing. Oh, I just fucking
Dude, I have a track I've been doing that on, and I'm like way under the gold time, but I can't get it without a fault.
Yeah.
I have this one spot that I'm faulting on, and it's like I just can't get the bike to land.
I definitely beat a number of your times, but there are a few of them I'm like, I have no idea how he did that.
I do not want to see your orbs. I just realized I don't want to see either of your orbs.
You do. It's fun because there's people on my friends list who are like way out in front of me too. Yeah, so okay. It's like, yeah, it's fun. All right. Wow. We like Trails HD.
I know.
We like Trials Evolution.
Surprised me. That's for sure. I did not think I'd like it.
What else should we get to here? What should we close out on? People were talking about my comments on the Ni No Kuni localization, and there was a big push-pull over that. But I don't know. We don't need to talk about that, do we?
Yeah. I mean, there was a push-pull over it. Some people agree and some people disagree.
Yeah, I thought one of the funniest parts was that it was someone – Lest I be taken out of context on that. I wasn't submitting that they should slipshod or in any way not do the best job they possibly could in creating Ni No Kuni for the Western audience. Simply that investing a tremendous amount of money and time and effort into that process made it increasingly difficult for them to recover it and make it a success. And I would really like for them to be a success, because every time one of these games gets above the waterline and people start paying attention to it, then its success or failure becomes an issue for whether or not I get to see more games like this.
Well, I think it was interesting. Somebody pointed out that it wasn't really even a success in Japan.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So,
And then so before we go to finishing moves, I'll just throw out there that Jeff, you loved SSX and you're getting Tricky DLC. Did you see that? Are you excited about that?
Yeah.
All right, so if you don't know, for $8 coming up, they haven't said exactly when you're going to be able to get an entirely new mountain with 9 big drops, and it is all Tricky style with corkscrews and big grinds and super jumps. And will you go back to SSX for that?
That is why I play SSX. That is what I want out of it.
So it should have been in there in the first place is what you're saying.
Take out the Deadly Descents, put that in.
All right. Yeah, Deadly Descents were kind of,
they were lame.
You didn't like the Survive It.
No.
I remember it was like Trick It and Race It were cool.
Great.
Survive It, not so much. No.
Whammy.
Not so much. All right, what are you playing over the weekend?
What am I playing over the weekend? I'm going to play some more Trials, probably.
Yeah.
What else? I don't know. I don't even know.
Super Meat Boy.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I will try that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
For sure.
It's worth trying,
Should I just pound a nail into my forehead instead? Or
probably,
quite possibly.
It'll feel like that.
But it does have the quick reset, man. So it's
Jeff, you're going to play some Bread Duck?
Yes. Well, actually, no, I played some Bread Duck earlier. That is a really obscure Flash game about a duck made of bread. It's a platformer. It's very cute, and I recommend checking out it out. I think it's on Newgrounds. But anyway, I'm also playing Cafeteria Nipponica, which is a new Kairosoft mobile game.
Oh, God.
And
is the crack still work?
Oh, yeah, the crack's still there. This is all about restaurant management. So you're deciding what the theme of your restaurant is. So you're upgrading that, adding new tables and managing your staff new dishes and like using new ingredients that you find to enhance your dishes and create new ones.
Is it out already?
It is out.
iOS or Android?
I'm playing it on Droid, but they always hit iOS first. So anyway, very fun.
So shall we?
I might be playing Witcher 2 on 360.
What do you mean you might?
Woo. I have it.
Dude, you should play that. Dude, this fucking game's awesome. You will love that game.
I played it all the way through on the PC.
All right.
I'm just saying I might play it on 360 as well.
I have it on 360.
I might make a different decision. Because the second act is completely different.
Yeah, entire realm changes depending on what you do.
I want to know how they address if they address it at all, the importing your shit from Witcher 1, because there is no console.
I think that's why they did the movies thing that they did.
But do you actually choose anything or no?
I don't know. Actually, we should fire it up and check it out.
Yeah.
There you go. That's our mission for the weekend. All right. Your mission for the weekend is to check out these finishing moves before we head out of here.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
Yeah. All right. Jeff Mattis, why don't you kick off the finishing moves for us?
Cool. Well, I have not yet played it. It just came out, I guess you're listening to this on Friday. It'll be yesterday, so Thursday. Botanicula by Amanita Design just came out. And if you're into quirky little adventure games that have freaking awesome art, I definitely recommend taking a look at it. I'm going to download it when I get home.
Most excellent. Yeah. Great recommendation. Macanarium was pretty freaking
really that was yummy. Yeah.
Beautiful game.
Carlos, would you like to go next?
Okay, I'm going to try to make this short, but basically Jeff and I were talking earlier about Ultima, one of our favorite games of all time, with a franchise, specifically 7, 4.
7 is my favorite game ever.
7, yes. And 7 was basically Skyrim before Skyrim had, you had those graphics, right? They had down to the forks. You could pick up a fork. It was amazing. The point of the story is it's a great game. You can get it on Good Old Games. We just looked it up. Ultima 7, get it. But there's a thing that I'm going to blow Jeff's mind with. That when I was a kid, I played it, and we were obsessed with it, and it was for PC. And then someone had created, like, a god mode or something. And I'm not sure if it was a developer thing or whatever, but basically it allowed you to take your backpack and pick up pieces of the earth, cats, whatever you want, and put them in your backpack and then walk around. So essentially, in that game, there's AI. So the baker would go bake his bread and then go to sleep, right? I would actually go pick up the baker, throw him in my backpack, walk down the street, get a horse, although the horse, I think, were two parts. You know, horse part one, part B, put him in the pack. And then wherever you walked, I made my own castle, put down the baker, made a kitchen area, and he just started doing the bacon.
That's amazing.
He just started doing the bacon. And then at some point, you could actually pick up pieces of mountain.
Personal chef.
And move them around. And so it was like God mode with Ultima 7.
I never heard of that.
It's like some sort of bizarro Minecraft.
That's pretty. And then we actually made like a little book because we were like, uber nerds over. Like, this is the book in the hexadecimal. Yeah. I'll try to find it for you because
it's my favorite game of all time. I used to play, this is a little nerd me out. I used to play that game without the sound. I would listen on my Walkman, the cassette tape of, wait for it, Please Hammer Don't Hurt 'Em. over and over. I just had that on.
I like how that was a 180 in a weird way. I was
now we know how you
I
do
love
it.
Ultima and also MC Hammer.
That explains a lot.
Does.
I listen to Rob Bass at the same time, but whatever.
Oh, my God. Okay, Jeff, would you like to finish? Like, I don't even know how you follow it up. But
yeah, no. This is going to be a sad attempt of following that up. I'm playing a little of The Splatters, which is another XBLA downloadable game. Really fun, really clever idea. Love the graphics. It's got some really cool sort of liquidy, physics-y kind of deal.
Hence Splatters.
Is it irregular?
Irregular.
An irregular game?
It's cool. It's another one of those sort of puzzle games. I think it would work very well on a handheld device where you have to sort of figure out the trajectory, you know, Angry Bird style trajectory of shooting your guy off so that he hits a certain number of things and collects a certain number of things. But it's got this cool kind of Burnout-esque back aftertouch kind of thing where if you hit something, you get another chance to explode into another thing. And it's pretty cool, and it looks fun. It has a really fun aesthetic to it. And I enjoyed it for the time.
Recommending it?
Yeah, I am.
Excellent. Mine's super simple, folks. A couple of weeks ago, my very good friend Ryan Payton was on here showing off Republique. He's talked about it a bunch. His Kickstarter is doing okay. However, I've seen so many of these classic franchises just blow up almost instantaneously. I know those games have great history and a lot of fan expectation behind them, but I'm really excited. I am genuinely excited for Republique, and I would invite you, if you haven't already, to go check out their Kickstarter again. Yeah. If you haven't told somebody about it, because they need some help, and they need a little like momentum to start going down the hill for them so they can achieve what they want to do with this game, which I think does take some risks that most folks in the mobile space are not going to be willing to go out. I mean like a lot of publishers or whatever. Like this is it's a risky proposition. He's got a lot of great ideas behind it. He's got a good team behind it. I'm really hopeful they can pull it together. And so get out there and I'm evangelizing for Republique because I think it's cool.
In a quick
elevator pitch, what's the actual subject? Because I actually don't remember it for the listeners who might not know it.
I will tell you. Okay, so for anyone who doesn't know Republique, basically the idea is
AAA stealth. Action where it actually acknowledges the fact that you're talking to a character through the device that you're on.
Yes.
Mm. And you're directing that character to do certain things in order to
you're like
stay
looking
hidden.
At the world through security cameras and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Character trapped in a totalitarian society's governmental building, and she's been imprisoned for a long time, escapes, has a contraband phone, calls the phone, picks up the phone to call one. Someone calls the number that's in the phone. It's you. And you're now connected via her phone and are helping her escape.
Okay. That's cool.
It's AAA on the level of, you know, an Infinity Blade as far as presentation. It looks really
good. Right.
Yeah, it does look really good.
All right, folks. There you go. That is the Weekend Confirmed show. Thanks very much to Carlos Rodella coming down from the Bay Area to be on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And where would we catch up with Screen Tear?
Yeah, Screen Tear. Just Google it. It's on GameSpot.com as well. But Screen Tear, Google. And then I'm Onawa on Twitter.
Excellent. Nice. And of course, you know, you can catch up with Jeff Mattis on both The Shack and on IndieGamesChannel.com.
Correct.
And Mr. Kanata, Totally Rad Show, every day of the week.
That's right. And follow me on Twitter, Jeff Kanata with two N's and one T. I'm going to see Avengers tomorrow morning. Avengers review will be out soon.
You had to go ahead and grind that salt in the wound.
Oh, you get to me. I'm so excited. And some board game reviews recently. So watch those episodes. Encourage us to do more of them, please.
Board games for the win.
Yeah.
All right, folks, much appreciate you listening. That is your Weekend Confirmed. If you're not already, do also watch the Shack News Daily Video Show on YouTube or on The Shack. And until next week, we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. For me to see what was going down, my body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.